It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We got a great big show for you. We're going to save the rumors to the end because there's actual news, lots of it. Andy Anakos here, Renee Ritchie's here, and we bring back a very special guest from episode 3 of Mac Breaks. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 559, recorded Tuesday, May 16th, 2017. Win32 must die. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software used by over 10 million small business owners. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. And by Capterra. Capterra helps you find and compare software solutions for your business needs with over 400 software categories, from app development to web analytics. Visit capterra.com/twit to start your free search today. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code MACBREAK to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. It's time for Mac... Mac Break Weekly. 5 days in Colorado. Suddenly, I'm saying fur. I am Leo Laporte, and this is a special Mac Break Weekly. First of all, we've got the... I'll introduce the usual panel, of course. And we're not that we're any less excited to have Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. It's always a pleasure. I'm glad the floods have contracted.
They have. The National Guard has gone. The police are off the streets. The bridges are reopened.
I was worried about you.
Leo, it was amazing. It went on both sides of me. It did, like, there was flooding all the way up on one road and all the way up on the other road, and I was sort of like this little island in the middle.
Wow. Well, we're glad you survived. That's all.
I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. Wow. It's not the annual melt.
It was a confluence of things. The snow melted really fast before the ground apparently could unfreeze, so it didn't have anywhere to go. And then a lot of that happened up north, too. Some levees broke, some dams had to be opened, and it just all landed here. Well, and it rained. It rained for like 2 weeks.
As I always say, the good Lord willing and the levees don't break, we'll be here. And in this case, the levees broke. So
I apologize. I have to take some people to appointments and pick up supplies.
Andy Anaka, that's his chortle. You can recognize that a mile away. It's great to see you, Andrew. I was in your homeland, Boulder, Colorado, at CU, where for many years you haunted the place at the World Affairs Council. They missed you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were just talking before the show about how interesting it is to not live a mile above sea level and then have to suddenly just be teleported to a place where apparently oxygen is very much an option.
It's scarce. Sort of thing. It's scarce up there. And I actually got the flu up there, as some people know, and it was not fun. But I did see my son graduate from CU Boulder. I'm very proud of Henry, and maybe a little less proud that he graduated in journalism, broadcast journalism. But actually, very proud.
No, he gets to take the reins of his own career and be one of those writers at the gates of dawn, speaking truth to power. Can I just say that, Renee, that has got to be one of the most Canadian things ever. You were apologizing for your country's natural disaster that kept you off the show last week.
So sorry, those levees broke.
We feel bad about it. I'm about to apologize for apologizing now.
I'm really thrilled to introduce our special guest. And actually, in a way, this is a reunion because he was one of our first guests. And I'm going to introduce him by playing my introduction way back in 2006. No, 9. This is Mac Break Weekly episode 3. When was this? I don't know. I can't do math anymore. 11 years ago. That's 2006. And it was a kind of a different show, same theme song, but this was Alex Lindsay's attempt to shoot 1080p video.
One of the things people say when you say, we're going to do a show all about Macintosh is, oh, great, it's just going to be a big Apple PR piece. Now, I want to say emphatically, that's not what it is. I mean, we use Macs, we love Macs. and we want to know more about Macs. But this isn't one big puff piece. And so it's not going to be a parade of Apple product managers. But there are a few exceptions. There's one guy who really belongs in the pantheon of the demo gods, ladies and gentlemen. One of my favorite people from Apple Computers, Sal Segoyan, is with us.
How are you doing,
Leo?
Good to see you. Thank you for letting me be here. I really appreciate it.
Oh,
this is great. I like this. This is wonderful.
Now, you started Apple. In fact, this is the anniversary, your ninth year.
Yes, that's right. How did you know that?
Today is the day. Cool.
This is my ninth year at Apple Computers, product manager for AppleScript, and now for Automator.
So when you joined,
and he did a wonderful series on Automator for us that I think was what made MacBreak it made us. We wouldn't have had the following we've had in the intervening 11 years if we hadn't had Sal Segoyan on at the beginning. And now here we are having him on at the end. No, in the middle. Let's say in the middle. Sal, it's great to see you.
It's great to be back on, Leo. Oh. I miss you guys, man. I was always so inspired by your work and your ability to get the message out to the larger Mac community. I admire you and respect you and Alex and all of the team there. And thank you for your support over the years.
Oh, we're great fans. Your hair's a little shorter since 2006, but
I just got out of the shower, so it's still a little wet.
There's still some there. All right, good.
Oh yeah,
and you still wear the ever-present beret. I'm glad to see, but there has been a change, and we were really sad. In fact, you were the title of the episode when we announced that you were leaving Apple, and I, for one, took it as a very bad sign, not for you, but for Apple. Do you want to talk about that at all?
It was a very interesting experience to go through, but out of the whole experience, a lot of positive stuff has come to fruition. And I think that the advancement of automation and the importance and the relevance of it have definitely been brought to the forefront through all of that experience. So I look at it as definitely a positive thing that I had to go through at the time, and it all worked out well in the end anyway.
Of course, hard personally. But, you know, a lot of times people tell that story that, you know, at first it's devastating to lose your job and then new doors open. And I take it from what you said, and you're being very, I think, diplomatic, but that there was a response that people said, well, what does this mean for AppleScript? What does this mean for Automator? What does this mean for automation in general on Mac OS?
The importance of automation for any company cannot really be understated. Right below security, automation is the number one concern of corporations and for businesses. It's the only way to get efficiency, speed, accuracy, consistent output, and to scale what you do. And I think that sometimes that message and that importance gets taken for granted, and it needs to be reaffirmed and re-embraced and communicated that way and viewed upon it as a possible message that our customers, that the customers of a corporation or the customers of an enterprise would be interested in adopting themselves.
By the way, Andy and Renee, don't let me hog the conversation. If you have questions, you could throw. You know me, I will.
I'm just looking on in awe and adoration.
We love Sal so much. One of the problems with automation is it's invisible. If it's done, you know, once you set it up, it's invisible. It just works. And I think it took for years somebody like Sal to again and again remind Apple how important it was to its customers. It's particularly pre-press, Sal, but where else is automation used?
Oh, you know, that's another aspect about automation is in its invisibilities. People don't realize the extensive use of it. From everything from media production to the setup of iOS devices, one of the last projects I was working on at Apple was connecting Automator to the process of automating the setup of iOS devices. And if you have 10,000 iPads or combination of iPads and iPhones, and you need to be able to maintain those and restore them and keep those devices viable, using automation is really the only way you're going to do that. And I'm not talking about over the air Wi-Fi MDM stuff. I'm talking about situations where you might be in a retail environment where an employee basically just has to plug the device in, have it do its magic, and then return to a certain state, and then a light turns green and they unplug it. There's plenty of scenarios of like that in the business world where automation is the key to their success in deployment of iOS devices. So there's another use case of automation. It just the transferring of data or the creation of data. I'm sure that in a lot of corporations, executives aren't aware of the fact that the charts that they see or the graphs that they touch are actually auto-generated using some kind of scripting language or some kind of automation. So it's not only in financial, it's not only in retail, it's not only in back office processes, it's in media creation. Fundamentally, any process where you have a labor-intensive series of actions that you have to take that have room for error, then that's a prime area that automation can contribute and solve.
Yeah.
Yeah, just say nothing about education, where you've got teachers who often have to be their own IT departments, even though they have their own IT departments.
Well, the beauty of AppleScript was that it was so easy to write. You could learn it. It was hard for programmers to get used to, but for normal people, it was very English-like. And then Automator took it the next step, and then anybody could just point and click, drag and drop, and make actions happen. And that was
three times
more
automated.
Yeah. But I wonder if Apple's road, you don't need to speculate it, Sal, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but I wonder if Apple's roadmap, I mean, Apple must know that this is a big part of its business, leads it to maybe wanting people to use Xcode or some other scripting method. What is Apple's support for Automator and AppleScript going forward? Okay, I got it.
I worked for the company for 20 years. I worked for the company for 20 years, and I have an understanding of it, and I have an intimacy with it that, I have to respect. So I can't talk about projects that they have ongoing or the kind of things that they do or the teams. But I can tell you that automation is ingrained at the lowest levels of what Apple does. For example, when I just mentioned the process of automating the setup of iOS devices, that uses Automator, which in turn relies upon an AppleScript Objective-C library.
Oh, interesting.
So anytime that process is used, you're going down to the fundamental core. And with AppleScript and AppleScript Objective-C, you have total access to all of the frameworks in the operating system. So suddenly things that weren't available are now available. And you'd be surprised how many things that you do on macOS are actually tied to automation behind them. So to answer your question, I think that automation is an inherent process that will never go away, that is important to not only Apple and its peer corporations, but to its customers as well. And I would like to see in the future, if I could have a wish, I would like to see Apple embrace that more and make that part of their message, which brings me to the topic of the things that I'm working on with Ken Case and the team at Omni, to develop a dual platform scripting architecture based on JavaScript core.
Ooh. And
what Omni has done is they have exposed the object models of their applications to JavaScript. And you write the script on the Mac or on iOS, and it runs the same on both platforms. And the things that you can do now with an iPad, you can make it look like it's running AppleScript on the Mac. It is just profound and an inspiring advance. And it would be my wish that Apple would look at this and embrace that over a long term and possibly make that part of their strategy as well.
Well, I believe this fits their strategy long term. And you don't have to comment because I know you know more than any of us outside do. But because if they're going to make the iPad be appear to a desktop computing system, one of the first things you have to do is inter app interoperability and communication and scripting. Would this Omni JavaScript be OSA compatible? Is it related to OSA or is it separate entirely?
It's similar to OSA. It's not related to OSA.
Okay.
Apple event architecture that OSA is based upon is particular to the Mac.
It's not available in iOS. Okay.
Exactly. But what they've done is recreate that strategy of exposing the internal of an application to a scripting language. So, for example, you could say, you know, set the color of this box to blue. And that script would work the same on iOS as it does on macOS.
Beautiful.
And
so it's a bridge, in effect, to OSA.
No, it doesn't actually run scripts over to OSA, but what it does is appear to OSA.
Appear, okay.
Yes. And one other amazing thing about it is since Omni had the insight, the basis on the core JavaScript that ships in WebKit, it also integrates with your standard JavaScript DOM. So you can have links or images on a web page that when you tap them, do a process, initiate a process, or transfer data over to a document in an Omni app. So I could have a table that I tap on a web page, and the data from the table will come over and colorize a map that I have in an Omni document. It is remarkable. It's really insightful, and I'm just so proud to work with Ken and his engineering team on this.
Are you and the Omni group planning on making this available to other applications? Because we'd love to see this be – right now it's only for Omni apps, but it's something I'd love to see all apps adopt.
I don't know what Ken's plans are with that regard. I think you'll have to ask him about that.
Okay.
But I definitely believe that they are showing how it is done and leading the way
nice.
With this.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll be showing it off at the Alt conference coming up, and I'll also be showing it off at the Command D conference coming up in August. As well.
I love this website. There's not much to say except go to the website if you want to know more about Command D, CMDDCONF, CommandDConf.com. And, of course, there's a little beret hanging off of the command. That tells you something right there. That's nice. This will be fun. This looks really interesting.
Yeah.
So this is more. This is all about all kinds of automation.
You know, we thought it's my friends and I. Yeah. We thought that it's time that the automation community got together and had an opportunity to share insights and ideas and a view into the future, and to really make our presence heard so that we can have some impact on where automation goes. So the conference is a review of the current state of automation, what things are available on both macOS and iOS, and then a look at the future of where this can go. And I'll be showing off the Omni new scripting architecture there as well. So there'll be a good chunk of it so you can see how this works, and I'll be giving you the detail inside information on how you can do this yourself as well. And we'll be extending into the evening, and I have my good friend Andy Anako is going to be doing a great session there as well. And we're finally going to end the night with Jason leading a podcast at the end where we all get together and answer the big questions.
Jason Snell, he'll be doing his Six Colors podcast from the event. But also you've got John Pugh, who's on the original AppleScript team.
Yes.
You've got John Welch, who's of course a well-known name in the Apple community, and Andy and Jason. Boy, that's a great lineup. That sounds like a lot of fun. So people want to know more, again, CommandDConf.com, CMDDConf.com. Go ahead, you guys.
I also love the fact that if you go onto the site, the logo has been generated by script.
Yeah, you can tell, can't you? It's a vector graphic. Yep.
Well, there's a video at the bottom of the page, and you can watch that. You can actually see the script that creates the logo, and you can see how it works. The Omni stuff I triggered a web page.
It's written in OmniJS.
Yes.
On an iPad.
Run that video, you'll actually see the script, and you'll see it run on an iPad. So there's the script on the web page. You tap it. There is the script. I'm going to review it so that you can see every line of the JavaScript code. And it's going to talk to the Omni application and create about 25 or 30 objects on the page and import the image and put it over command sign.
That is really cool. Yeah, that is really cool.
It's beautiful. It really is. It really does take everything back to the days when we had real control and real ownership over the computers that we buy, where more and more and more it seems like users are being sort of shoved into the corner of no. We are your job is to buy things that we make. Whether it's app developers or hardware makers, we're going to your job is not to create or to control your computer. Your job is to run apps. And the more you give people the ability to control automation through scripting, the more their iPad or their phone or their laptop is theirs, as opposed to just something that they're licensing from other people.
Sal, I know you just came on to spend a little time with us, but I'm very glad you could be here. Again, we're thrilled to know that not only are you still alive, but
kicking, sir,
and that you're kicking as well.
That got heavy pretty quickly.
Not dead yet, Leo.
And can I just add a huge thank you for?
You just blew the ending of my podcast where I talk to people. Why haven't anybody seen Sal? Is he being controlled by his housekeeper?
Yes, we thought you went the Richard Simmons route, but now we're glad to know Naomi isn't actually keeping you locked inside a closet and feeding you strange porridge once a week.
No, I'm
just had a huge.
Go ahead. Renee wants to say something serious.
I just wanted to add a huge thank you just to you for all your years of evangelizing automation, not just outside Apple, but inside Apple. And I hope very much that both those things remain true going forward.
Yeah, there's a great story about Sal standing up to Steve Jobs, and Steve Jobs actually saying, oh, okay.
Sal was right.
It's absolutely true that Sal, in many ways, is the heart and soul of Apple, certainly of heart and soul of Apple Automation.
I think he trained a generation of people to pick
that
torch.
That's right. Sal, great to see you. All the best
to you
and
so
Naomi.
Much.
We've been on a few cruises with you guys. They're as fun and exciting and sweet as you would imagine. And I can't wait to see what happens at Command D. That's great. That's great news. And I'm really excited about OmniJS. I do want to see that. That's got to happen across the board on iOS. We need that.
There's a website, omni-automation.com. If you want to preview it and take a look, and there's videos there, you're welcome to go visit the site. And thank you so much, Leo, for having me on today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sal.
What a team they have now. I mean, Tim Wood and Brent Simmons and Sal Segoyan. It's amazing. Yeah.
Well, I think this is interesting, isn't it? This company is really – now you're starting to see a trajectory for Omni Group.
I'm starting to wait for the Omni operating system to come out.
Yeah.
Didn't they build OmniWeb like overnight? Didn't Ken like knock OmniWeb out overnight or some ridiculous story?
Really?
Like,
wow. It's amazing. Sal, it's great to talk to you. Thank you so much for being here.
See you all.
Bye, Sal. Sal Segoyan.
Thanks, Sal.
One of the original Mac breakers. He's been breaking Macs since way back when. 2000.
Breaking Mad coming to AMC next year.
1997. Since 1997, breaking Macs. Let's take a little break, and we will get to the Mac Rumor Fest. Adam was on last week saying, well, we don't do rumors. Well, we're going to do rumors because...
Well, two weeks before WWDC, or excuse me, a few weeks before WWDC, it's a good time to talk about rumors because now there are people who are operating forklifts who get to see things.
Exactly.
So. And hardware rumors. We get hardware rumors again for the first time.
I'm excited.
Years.
Mark Gurman has some very interesting things to say, but we'll get to that in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor, if you don't mind. MacBreak Weekly brought to you today by FreshBooks, perfect Mac application. It works on anything because it works on a web page. And, of course, there's iOS apps as well as Android apps for FreshBooks. But FreshBooks is really about keeping your small business or personal business on track. It started, and it started this way for me as well, with invoices. It was the part of the month I hated the most. And this is way back in 2004, even before I knew Sal Segoyan. I had to do invoices to the Canadian company, Rogers, that I was doing the TV show for up there. I had to send them expenses. And it was, I was, you know, doing a spreadsheet, and it was just a pain in the butt. Plus, it was Canadian dollars. FreshBooks saved my booty. They made beautiful, and they still do. In fact, they're better than ever. Beautiful invoices that automatically handled any currency. So you didn't have to do the conversion yourself. It just did it. It also has a pay me button right on there. And even if you're not set up to get credit, take credit cards, they are. They handle the payments. You can let your clients can pay you online with no setup required right from the invoice. That means you're going to get paid an average of 11 days faster because clients actually put off paying you the same way you put off invoicing them. It's just something nobody wants to do. You didn't get in business to do bookkeeping. So why not use FreshBooks? By the way, it's gone so much farther. It's now a full cloud accounting system. I hate to call it that, though, because that sounds intimidating. But it happens just in the nature of tracking your expenses with the FreshBooks app, taking pictures of receipts, making the invoices. Now FreshBooks knows what your accounts receivable are, what you've been paid, what your expenses are, what your profit is. And you can tell how much money you're making any given time. Just go to your dashboard on the FreshBooks dashboard, so you have access to your spending, your outstanding balances, your total profit. And when your accountant, you know, it's tax time, your accountant says, I need sales tax summary or a profit and loss statement, you can generate that too. Or investors, you can generate, you know, if somebody, let's say somebody came along and said, I'd like to buy your business or I'd like to invest in your business, would you be able to generate a profit and loss statement in a reasonable amount of time? If the answer is no, really, you ought to be using FreshBooks. You can push a button. Beautiful, professional profit and loss statement. I don't know how tax time was for you this year, but if it was a pain in the butt, this will make it so much better. Stay connected to your clients. Keep tabs on your business no matter where you are. Get rid of the shoebox. You can track expenses by adding them either on the desktop, snapping a photo of the receipt, connecting your bank account and credit card will automatically import expenses daily. It works, of course, with all the things you work with. If you already use Stripe, it can use Stripe, no problem, or Shopify, or Gusto, or Acuity Scheduling. You can do team timesheets on this. You can do your own timesheet. You could do your own time and hours, but you can also do project billing. I mean, I can go on and on and on. Why don't you just try it? Save 2 days of paperwork a month. Make tax time a breeze next year. Try it free. 30 days, freshbooks.com/MacBreak. Oh, don't forget to tell them MacBreak Weekly when they ask, how did you hear about us? Freshbooks.com/MacBreak. I feel like something's talking to me. Did you hear a voice or is this just the flu still?
Someone order a dollhouse.
We have, you know, it's weird. Must be this way in your houses, too, that periodically things just wake up and say, hello. I don't know what you meant.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. I didn't say anything, but now sorry it interrupted me. It's very confusing.
Yeah, especially when I'm watching TV. Sometimes like two devices like in the bedroom or the living room will say, I don't know how to answer that.
Yes, it drives me nuts.
You have Grey's Anatomy on. They say, seriously, suddenly three computers are talking to you. It's just very confusing.
Well, and I think it's only going to get worse.
I can't believe that Danielle tried to pull that junk on Stevenia again.
Well, they'll be talking to each other.
Like, to her boutique.
You'll walk in and Siri and Alexa will be having a conversation without you. And you'll just turn around and leave again.
You saw the Saturday Night Live Amazon Echo Silver parody, did you?
I did not.
No.
What? Okay. Oh. I know I played this already once. But it's too funny not to play. And I know it has nothing to do with MacBreak, but it's, again, too funny not to play. And if you haven't seen it, you're going to enjoy it. This is Saturday Night Live.
Alec Baldwin play the Alexa?
No, that would be funny.
The new Amazon Echo has everyone asking Alexa for help.
Alexa, what time is it? What the hell is wrong with this blasted thing? Amanda!
But the latest technology isn't always easy to use for people of a certain age.
These kids done bought me a busted machine again. Oh, Odessa!
That's why Amazon partnered with AARP to present the new Amazon Echo Silver, the only smart speaker device designed specifically to be used by the greatest generation. It's super loud and responds to any name even remotely close to Alexa, so they can find out the weather.
Allegra, what is the weather outside?
It is 74 degrees and sunny.
Huh?
It is 74 degrees and sunny.
Where?
Outside.
What about it?
The temperature outside is 74 degrees and sunny.
I don't know about that.
The latest in sports.
Clarissa, how many did old Satchel strike out last night?
Satchel Paige died in 1982.
How many did he get?
Satchel Paige is dead.
He what now?
Died.
Who did?
Satchel Paige.
I don't know about that.
Even local news and pop culture.
Anita, what them boys up to across the street?
They are just playing.
They what now?
They are just playing.
You say they just playing now?
Yes, they are just playing.
I don't know about that.
Pair it to smart devices like your thermostat.
Alessandra, turn the heat up.
The room is already 100 degrees.
Are you trying to kill me, Alizé?
The new Amazon Echo Silver plays all the music they loved when they were young.
It's the fake
Angela, play black jazz.
Playing jazz.
It also has a quick scan feature to help them find things.
Emilia, where did I put the phone?
The phone is in your right hand.
And it has an feature for long rambling stories.
So then I gave him $5, and he said I only gave him $1.
Uh-huh.
I said, I know I gave you a $5.
Uh-huh.
Because I only had a $5 and a $1 on me.
Uh-huh.
And this is the $1 right here.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you tell me who's crazy.
Amazon Echo Silver. Get yours today. I said get yours today.
To order Amazon Echo Silver, send a check or money over to Amazon.com right now.
Oh, great.
That's Saturday Night Live at its best. They've really hit their stride this season.
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that. It's funny because it's true. And I'm almost at that age. So, but I did give my mom, she has two Echoes. And I bought the new Echo Home, the one with the screen, so I can, because she likes to FaceTime. I wish I'd done a screenshot of my Mother's Day FaceTime with my mom. Talked to her for quite a long time, but I was talking to her forehead the whole time. Because finally at the end I said, you know, Mom, you can look at the screen and see what you're showing, to me, what I'm seeing. And then, of course, I see her full face. She said, yeah, right. So,
was she holding it up to her face like a phone?
Yeah,
that's often the problem.
No, she was looking. Oh, you know what? It was fine. She wanted to see me. I made sure that my face was nicely centered and full frame.
Hi, boy.
And she didn't. And so the fact that she wasn't paying attention to what she was sending is, you know, what I don't blame her. This right. The home thing will be good though, because it'll send. You know, it'll be steady. A whole shot. The show. I'm sorry. The Echo Show. I keep calling it the home. The only thing that's a little nerve-wracking about this device is it has a feature that is straight out of Saturday Night Live called drop-in. And Amazon says, only turn this on for people you would give your home keys to. But it's worse than that. Because if, let's say, you put it in your bedroom, at any point, anybody who has drop-in permission could just say, turn on the camera. Let's see what's going on.
Hey, Mom, I'm outside. Mom, oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Uncle Billy.
but of course, that's why it's like it's not a default feature. You use that judiciously. But even that video shows off why devices like this are
challenging.
They're actually trending into becoming important devices, because it really is the way that people understand how to talk to someone and then listen for a response later on. And especially for people who aren't really into tech, there are, which spans all age groups. And it's also going to have to be able to actually do stuff like that, like say, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. And for the device to understand, that means I need to repeat that thing again. Or I'm going to need to listen to the intonation and figure out, okay, what part of it did he or she not hear? I bet that I gave a weather report that was 20 seconds long. I bet they just wanted to know, do I need a jacket or not? So I'll just repeat that bit. The smarter these devices get, the more useful it's going to be. And it's going to be it's exciting to think about what Apple will do if the rumors turn out to be true and they come out with their own, like, you know, Siri in a box
yeah.
device.
Well, in a way, Amazon has chopped its way through the jungle, appropriately, and shown where various paths can lead. And so Apple, and this is Apple's done this before, they did it with MP3 players, can now cagily choose the path that seems the most fruitful and the most popular. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
My godkids were using Siri to send and receive text messages before they could read or write. They would just pick it up and say, tell mom, blah, 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 blah. And then she'd send back a message and they would read it, the message to them, and they would respond. And that's incredibly enabling technology. Like Andy mentioned, it's not just for old people. It's not just for people who aren't tech inaccessible. It's going to be a whole generation of people who just assume that their devices can talk to them, much as they assume their devices are multi-touch and they can directly interact with them.
I think what's interesting is, you know, you might say, oh, the future of interfaces is voice or then virtual reality or touch. But what the future of interfaces really is this kind of variety of ways to interact. And
It's the idea that the idea of having anything as the hub of your experience is now it's dead. It's the idea that no matter where I am, there is an instance in which a certain specific type of technology is going to be super appropriate. And so just like right now I'm sitting in front of the most appropriate device for what I do over the course of the day, which is to write lots of stuff and do research on lots of stuff. So I need lots of windows. I need big screens. I need multiple screens. I apparently also need a good pair of speakers so I could listen to really great music while I'm stuck here for 8 or 9 hours. But then we get down to the really, really minimalist approach where if I just want to know a question that I ask once or twice a day, I'm about to leave for a 3 or 4 mile walk. Do I need a jacket? Do I need an umbrella or do I need to forget about it? It's not something that I even want to take a device out of my pocket and press 2 buttons to do. The idea that I can just simply ask a question and get an answer, that is amazing. And that is, it really does help daily, moment by moment life. So again, I hope that this is not going to be a situation. I doubt it's going to be a situation where Apple just simply says, the Amazon Echo, build us one of them like it that makes us money instead of Amazon.
That would be bad.
It'd be nice. I'm certain that they'll try to take it in their own direction.
Yeah.
It was a little curious to hear. Some talk about how, oh well, we don't think that it's very, very useful without having a screen attached to it. I've never played a game on a device just by speaking to it. And it's like, yeah, but it's okay to. Again, it seems like the Echo does really, really well not having a screen, and even Google Home does really well having a screen because this is a brand new thing. This is a different thing. It doesn't have to have a screen, which means it doesn't have to have a component that will increase the unit cost by $53 at the very minimum.
This does pose a challenge for a company like Apple that wants to create the total ecosystem you live in, because that means they have to create all the parts of this heterogeneous system, from your car to your automated home to your television, and that is a huge challenge.
Or just the frameworks, like HomeKit is a framework and HealthKit is a framework that lets them interface with medical devices and home automation devices.
But ultimately, don't they really want to make at least the reference device? Isn't this the lesson Apple and Microsoft now is learning, is that you got to make at least one device for each of
there was this really good comment from Steve Jobs where he's like, yeah, we could make a couple of $1 million from that, but is that a real business we want to be into? And I think they understand their limits and they don't want to stretch themselves too thin.
I understand that, but it's a changed world now.
Yeah,
totally. But they can make it so that those devices, like, I think the logic there is that they want to make it so that you have a phenomenal experience with those devices if you're using the Apple ecosystem. Like if you have Hue lights, it's better if you have HomeKit. Or they would argue it's better if you have HomeKit than if you just use it with something else.
Yeah, that's what Microsoft says about Windows now is, you know, we're going to offer our tools and applications and services. That's a big business for Windows as much as it is for Apple. Anywhere our customers are, which is why they have great iPad apps. But the experience will always be best on Windows. Is that Apple's message as well? Not that the experience will be best on Windows.
I think they're saying that the more control that they can have over the environment, the better an experience that they can provide for you. I think that's a valid point of view. I think it's been working for Apple very, very well. The limiting factor, I think, in Apple's strategy in rolling out new products, though, is that every time they step up to the plate, they want to hit a home run, whereas they're not interested in something that will simply advance the runners. And so you win games not by hitting home runs, but by advancing the runners. Samsung and Amazon, of course, are completely different companies from Apple. They have the ability to create a lot of different things, and they don't have the entire company riding on their next success or failure. But this is the reason why Samsung, for instance, was able to come up with this really stupidly big phone. And then again, just let's see if this advances the runners a little bit. And turns out that yes, everybody really wants a big phone. Amazon was able to say, well, let's have an active smart speaker and see if that'll advance the runners. And goodness gracious, yes, it turns out that everybody really, really wants that. And so it doesn't matter that the Fire Phone struck out. It doesn't matter that Samsung introduced two or three or four different products that once again. They once again sent them back to the dugout, kicking the water cooler instead of making any progress. But I would love to see Apple try more things that are just we are not going to try to reinvent or save or hey we didn't come into the smart speaker market first, but we perfected it. We solved all the problems. It's okay for them to again have here's a speaker, here is an A5 processor that can run Siri. And we will just simply put runners on base, advance the runners to from first to second, and create something that people love that costs $130, $140,
yeah, but
as opposed to we started off with a block of the purest aluminum 4 miles on a side, and we carved it down into, I don't know, okay.
You're like me, though, Andy. You're a user of heterogeneous systems. It's a challenge to make them work together. But isn't that ultimately the future we're all going to have to live in? I would submit it's not good, and B, it's too hard to do for any one company to make the entire ecosystem of smart products that you surround yourself with.
It's to suit everybody's taste.
Well, again, Renee?
Just to suit everybody's taste. I mean, that's the thing is some people in your house are going to want iPads. Some are going to want Android devices. Some are going to want.
But in the past, it's been like that. It's been a choice. Like, oh, you are your Windows or your Mac or your Android or your iPhone. Isn't it better for? I mean,
big gadget love, Leo. We're in the generation of big gadget love.
Oh yeah, but I mean, maybe because we're in the business, we're different from normal users. But and God knows it's hard enough to get these things to interoperate. I think companies need to work harder at that. Need to recognize that it's impossible. This megalomaniac desire to own it all is unfeasible and not good for the world. And really, you know, it's not going to be Apple versus Microsoft or iOS versus Android. It's going to be the best because we just stipulated it's the best interface for the situation. It's the best hardware for the situation. And that's going to vary widely.
Oh my God! It's single integrated provider versus best of breed solutions again. We've gone full circle.
We have been here before, haven't we?
It's
what do you do?
I just think it's going to be difficult. Apple really has to be on point now with everything that they do because this is a totally different world than it was when Steve Jobs was saying such very smart and very very correct things. Because right now, if I were to ask somebody to sit down and write a list of every single app, every single piece of hardware, everything that they absolutely rely on without necessarily relying on a manufacturer name, they would say, well, I need Facebook. I need Spotify. I use Google Docs for most of my work. I use Microsoft Office for a lot of my other work. I keep all my notes in Evernote. They would go through, and I've used Hue smart bulbs. I use, they would come down to, okay, so you realize that this means that you can use whatever phone you want. You can use whatever hub you want. You can use whatever laptop you want. These are not, they no longer have an allegiance to Apple or Android or Microsoft or even Google. Well, okay, Google is different because they are everywhere.
Oh, and it just responded to you.
Exactly. There you go. But it becomes difficult to say, here is your new Windows Surface notebook. And well, why do I buy this? Well, because it's better than the rest. Okay, how does it help me access Facebook and run Microsoft Office better than the rest? Apple's going to be in that same position of saying that here is your brand new iPhone. Well, why should I buy it? Considering that I can buy a phone for $400 less. Well, it runs Apple Music better than anybody else. Yeah, but I don't use Apple Music or Apple Photos or I use Spotify and I use Google Photos or I use Facebook for my photos. It's going to be harder for a Grand Slam company to be as successful as they were 5 or 10 years ago. I think that we're moving towards an industry where you got to keep advancing the runners. And again, So long as it's okay to have some strikeouts, so long as you keep getting someone on base, getting that running that base runner to scoring position, and then getting them home at some point.
I think we see that with things like going all the way back to iTunes on Windows, and now iCloud. There's various iCloud facilities on Windows, and there's various web apps that people can access now. And it's sort of like, we get it, you can't do everything right now. Maybe you want to buy four low-cost phones for your four kids. You're not going to get them all iPhones, and we'll just make sure you have some services like Apple Music available. And then eventually they might want to move up to an iPhone, and when we do, we'll be really happy to get it for them.
It's a little not in Apple's DNA, though, isn't it, Renee? I mean, doesn't Apple kind of want you to use... I mean, they reluctantly provided iTunes for Windows. It never worked very well. They still don't offer messages for any other platform. They really they still have it
in
their idea.
Yeah, it's pick and choose. But they are very certain about where they want to compete. And for people who can't, like, they'll know that some people, for example, their first phone just won't be an iPhone. But they want to make sure that if you get your second phone or third phone, you start to consider Apple, and then they'll have a product for you. So I think they're getting more careful on how they're delineating their
different markets.
Such
a big deal if you live in a browser and even on a desktop or a... Then you can use
Chrome
a variety.
OS, right?
You can use a variety of software, but it becomes a big deal when you have many hardware devices. You're talking to some, you know, somewhere on your doorbell. I mean, then it becomes kind of more complicated. I mean, I look at my kitchen. I don't say, "Well, I'm only going to buy products from, you know, Breville or something." I buy a variety of tools, and hey, lo and behold, a toaster's a toaster. They all interoperate. Isn't that a better way of doing things, or is a kitchen just too simplistic?
It is. I mean, it is better to. I think that the better thing for users is always choice, 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 control, control,
right.
control. Let me do exactly what I want. Let me have the hardware that I want within realism.
And the better thing for companies is kind of to make you buy everything from them. But
yeah, well,
I think that's undoable, increasingly undoable.
To buy things from them, you have to figure out what your core strength is. Apple is also in a really good position, despite what I was saying just 5 minutes ago, where if they can also say that, well, I know that you've been using Windows forever, but you've been very, very happy with it. But given that most of your apps and services are now platform independent, can you credibly tell me that this $1,500 MacBook or this $1,500 MacBook is not one of the best designed, most beautifully constructed, most durable with the computers, laptops you can buy with the best support, where you walk into a store, you say, "Me happy, no laptop with," and you shove it to them, and they either give you your money back in 2 weeks, or they make you happy and give you a different or a better laptop if they want to practice their "we're awesome" policy. It's a really complicated graph. Another thing is that now that I would say that there are a lot of great search engines out there, alternatives to Google. There are a lot of great services, alternatives to Google. But at this point, because I have made the decision, which is not necessarily right or wrong, but it was my choice, to trust Google with personal information and with my browsing experience, goodness gracious, Google search is really good at figuring out exactly what I mean by "I want you to I want to do a search on high performance sports cars." It knows by now that I'm not buying one. I'm just curious about the engineering of it, and it will tend to give me search results that are kind of like that, and goes for that for category. So as it really is up to Apple, I think, to start taking advantage of the knowledge that the information that Apple users have entrusted to them, to say, "We are going to Siri has known you for the past 4, 5, 6 years. It has worked in your office. It knows that you're grumpy on Tuesday. It knows that the way to manipulate you into getting ahead on your deadlines is to give you one of those Toblerones on your desk on a Friday at around 2 p.m. when your blood sugar is starting to crash." That's one of the ways that you start to make people into a dedicated, almost impossible to blow from your to blow out of your customer base. Customer saying, "Yes, you could run Spotify or anything else, but only Apple knows when you like to use Spotify and where you'd like to have the Spotify icon on all your different devices." It's a really different metric than it was just a few years ago.
I wonder. I mean, if Apple were to be a next generation, you know, Keiretsu, a huge conglomerate success of the kind, you know, that you know, in Neuromancer.
Like Hitachi.
Yeah. That, well, no, like even in the future, you know, when you read science fiction novels by William Gibson, these companies are massive 100-year, 300-year companies. If you were going to, if you wanted to be that, and I presume Apple does kind of want to be that, I wonder if Tim Cook spends any time thinking, look, we've got $250 billion. Why don't we try? Why don't we shoot the moon and try to be a company that makes every product from? I mean, it sounds like maybe they were thinking that they
just got to make the implant, Leo, and then they'll be able to beam the rest into our heads. Why make a fridge if you can make a virtual fridge in our heads?
They have finally spent a little bit of that money. They acquired an AI company. This makes sense. Lattice Data. It's a specialist. This is interesting. It's a very specialized tool. They spent $200 million on it. It takes dark data, data that's not visible on the web, but you know, universities and elsewhere are generating data like this all the time. In fact, you know, data that's not structured. It's not. It's not
in neat table rows and columns.
You can't search it. You can't, you know, put it in a Google index. It's a jumble of stuff. And Lattice, which is developed by some very sophisticated one guy's a genius grant winner for his work on Deep Dive, which is the non-commercial version of what Lattice makes, is on the team. It may just be an acquire. They got 20 engineers for this, and it may be that they wanted the technology, but it shows at least one data point that Apple wants to beef up its artificial intelligence, and it wants to know more than Google in a sense. It doesn't want to just know stuff that's spiderable, but stuff that's not spiderable, the dark data.
It's a little beyond that, too. It's like,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Renee.
Structured data is something we know very well. Almost every database was built from Google to, you know, from Oracle on up to handle structured data, which is everything in nice, neat columns with rows, tables with rows and columns. And that's sort of like you find gold and you're just going through picking up the big nuggets, going, here it is, here it is, here it is. But eventually that you've exhausted that stuff. There's no more intelligence or actionable data you can pull from that. So you start sifting. You start sifting through the riverbeds. And that's largely the unstructured data, which could be binary blobs like movies or JPEGs or MP3. Or it could just be tons of metadata, or it could just be a bunch of stuff that's never properly been sorted through or, you know, normalized or sanitized, anything like that. And you can – this product, I don't know exactly what Apple would do with this, because this is a tremendous amount of work to get probably not a lot of actionable intelligence about it. But it's a good way to ingest vast amounts of data. I think that's something that we've seen Apple struggle with previously, especially with Maps, which is taking vast quantities of data and figuring out some sane approach to it. And if they can do that with some form of machine learning and some form of artificial intelligence to get really, really good results from vast quantities of disparate data, which is what you're dealing with Maps and transportation and a whole bunch of different industries, and that just makes their efforts to learn things without necessarily that famous line from Craig Federighi, we don't need your picture of a mountain to know what a mountain looks like,
yeah.
But they do need to be able to analyze vast amounts of data so they know on their side what a mountain looks like.
Well, yeah, exactly. That, well,
I think it's an interesting acquisition for them, because as soon as you think about what Deep Dive, for instance, is, it's not so much, it is AI, it is machine learning, but it's also every time that you've done, let's say, a Google search on just a basic question, and it didn't just give you links to web pages that had those keywords in it. It didn't just say, oh, here's a Wikipedia article, we'll put that at the top. It was able to actually analyze the Wikipedia article, create a box all on its own with a bulleted list saying here's how to disable Shlomo voice recognition temporarily so you can have a conversation without interrupting you, and instead of pointing you to the article, it will say here are the steps you need to do. And that is a sort of understanding, the ability to look at data that has not been formatted and to hand you the answer you want and find the answer that you need. It is the way for Siri to be able to construct more intelligent answers, like saying what problems are the Red Sox having with their pitching this year, and you know that you read something in the Boston Globe 3 days ago that was a really good article, that's kind of what you're looking for. But for it to say that it seems as though they hired a whole bunch of people that have gone from active marijuana users to active heroin users and they're way too sleepy in order to actually be able to throw right-handed anymore, that's the sort of stuff that makes it to a magical experience when it's actually giving you answers as opposed to not just helping you to find something you can then click on. So this is it's a really interesting buy because it's a technology that can apply pretty much everywhere. Yeah. But it's you easily see how it's going to help with Apple Maps and how it's going to help with Siri.
Yeah, be very interesting. A couple of other news items before we get to the rumors of the week, which are actually really juicy and
juicy. Yeah,
yeah. But I just wanted to mention that I got iOS 10.3.2 along with watchOS 3.2.2, tvOS 10.2.1. Renee, you're the king of new OS versions. What the hell?
I mean, like it says it right there. It's a security bug fixes, security improvements, little bits here and there. These aren't like huge. The like 10.3 or a 10.4 would be a big feature release. But the point, you know, the incremental updates usually just fix and polish off rough edges.
That's important, though, in this world. I mean, we are really now becoming hyper aware of security.
Absolutely.
I think the WannaCry vulnerability taught a lesson to people like Dianne Feinstein and the FBI. Well, I don't know who runs the FBI anymore, but Theresa May, that when governments insist on, governments aren't able to keep a lid on their own secrets. Let's put it that way. The heart and soul of this ransomware exploit that really spread it very fast over the weekend to 200,000 machines, shut down 16 hospitals in Great Britain. With the heart and soul of it was an exploit that allowed it to spread itself over Windows networks using a flaw that was discovered and cultivated by the NSA. Microsoft was mad at the NSA. Others were mad at Microsoft. Microsoft did, you know, once the shadow brokers released that big dump of NSA exploits a few months ago, Microsoft combed through it as best it could and patched that particular SMB1 exploit. So any more modern machine is safe. But I think they're about to, or maybe they already have exploit patches for even for as old as XP. So this has been a problem that's been around a long time.
For the people running Windows on their Mac, too, it's important to check for that stuff. It's not that you're,
Yeah, and the thing is, we called a staff meeting this morning, and I said, I know you guys all know this. You're sophisticated tech users, and we do a lot to protect you here. But I just want you to understand how this stuff spreads, and I wanted you to have my voice in the back of your head every time you were tempted to open an attachment or click on a link in an email. the fact that all of these exploits leaked out, and by the way, this is the first that's been weaponized by bad guys. It now looks like it's North Korea, by the way, which I think is very interesting. When I looked at that WannaCry, I thought, wow, they've translated this into like 18 languages. It's got a want to know more about Bitcoin link, how to buy Bitcoin link. I mean, this was, they put a, whoever wrote it put a lot of kind of an abnormal amount of care into it. And I thought, that looks a little governmental. And in fact, there's evidence, no proof, but evidence that maybe it was from North Korea. And that would make sense. They didn't make a lot of money, apparently, only $26,000 as of Saturday, which is not unusual. Malware exploits like this often don't make a lot of money, but a lot for the perpetrator, not a lot considering the billions of dollars of damage that they do. But nevertheless, there are many more exploits remaining in this shadow broker's dump. There's the CIA leaks. There's Vault 7. The government can't hold on to these secrets. There's going to be a huge economic price to be paid, and we as computer users are going to face a lot of problems. This just underscores, it proves in effect that Tim Cook was right when he said, no, we're not going to give you a backdoor to the iPhone because you guys, we can't trust you guys.
We'll put it in a box. We'll keep it safe. It'll be in a box.
Yeah.
Back in my closet.
No.
In the lockbox that's not being used for Social Security benefits.
There you go. There's an article that says exactly that. But yet we still hear from Senator Feinstein from California and others calls to have a backdoor to encryption. And, of course, it's already passed in the UK. Theresa May, the current prime minister, wrote that and legislation and sponsored it for years. It finally got through.
Yeah, there's also a lot of kind of nasty stuff that's making its way through state legislatures. There's one which I can't remember the citation. I was just reading about this last week, where It's, of course, it's being called Evans' Law to help to, against in honor of a teen, I think, who got killed by a distracted driver in a car. And the law saying that, well, that police should have the right to analyze a phone in a sort of like a breathalyzer sort of scenario to determine whether or not it was used recently, like within a few minutes of the crash. So being said, we don't have the right to check your contacts, your texts, or any of the content. We only have the right to do a breathalyzer type of scan on the device to see what apps were being activated, was this being interacted with, were they tapping on the screen. And it's a well-intentioned law, but how is that going to be possible on a phone without having some sort of a legislatively mandated backdoor that says at least give me access to the USB bus or the USB chain, or make sure there's a system log of some kind that is being put in an openly accessible place. And of course, as soon as you introduce any kind of vulnerability. Again, these aren't desperate losers creating these cracks. These are incredibly sophisticated and incredibly gifted engineers who are just twisting doorknobs and trying to find where is the weakness here. And a lot of them are working on the side of the angels, and a lot of people are working on the side of the not angels or the government angels who
are giving them. I would say Apple needs to do more, because right now Apple encourages everybody, and I think most people do it. First of all, the default when you install Mac OS is to back up your documents folder and your desktop to the cloud, to iCloud. It also encourages you to back up your phone to iCloud. And as we know, Apple has the keys to your data on iCloud and will hand it over to law enforcement if requested. So I want trust no one encryption of my iCloud data. I presume Apple's working on that, because certainly they don't want to be in that position. But this is the kind of thing that these bills would force.
Wasn't the old version, I have to double check this because I might be mistaking with two-factor authentication, because it's always fail safe or fail secure, and they discovered that their users cared more about getting access back to their photos if something went wrong,
well, their rather users than the government are wrong, getting their and they photo. Need to do the right thing by their users.
Well, no, but I mean, it's like I feel the same way. But then I talk to people and they're like, oh, if I lost all my photos, that's the worst thing that could happen to me. Not someone stealing it or the government getting them, but losing all my photos is the absolute worst thing that could happen to me. So I'd even recommend, you know, maybe not using iCloud for that and using something that lets you generate your own client-side key, like something like Backblaze or Carbonite.
But everybody who uses Apple stuff, it's by default. They probably don't even know that happens. Look at your desktop. See where it's saved. It's saved to the cloud, which is when I first saw that, I said, why is that happening? I don't want to do that. And it's a setting in your iCloud settings. You can turn on off, and I would turn it off because you're basically making your documents public.
I presume that Apple
does everything it can to protect those keys. But so does the FBI, so does the NSA, and so does the CIA.
I had a really good conversation with Dave Nanian about this, because we were working on our backup guide a couple of months ago for International Backup Day, and he made the same pitch. He said, I just don't recommend that people encrypt their backup drives, because most people, they're not worried about someone coming in and stealing it. They have way more valuable stuff on their desk than they have on that drive, but they're going to lose their photos and they're going to lose their tax returns. And for them, that's an irretrievable loss.
Well, I agree. You know, held backup drives, that's a different matter. But stuff you've stored on the internet is available to any Tom, Dick, or Harry who can get the key. I really feel like that we're going to see if we see what's happening. I think WannaCry was just the first of what will be several hundred over the next 6 months nasty exploits because of the NSA leak. Just nasty. Mm-hmm. It's going to be bad out there. But the first time somebody, you know, right now, when I put something on my iPhone, that is not available to anybody. That cannot be, unless you hand it over to the Border Patrol, that is not available unless you unlock
so complicated
your stuff.
But that's it really does show how
or
you
back
can't
it up
predict.
To iCloud.
you can't predict what hardware is going to go like in the next 2 or 3 or 4 years, because needs can change on a dime for reasons that are completely unpredictable. I think that there is, if people really do care about this sort of stuff, we're going to see that reflected in an uptick on people who are find it less attractive to buy $1,000 top of the line feature phone and instead get a burner style phone that I can easily wipe it in a second if I have to hand it over, or if I lose it, so I can do that remotely, and that if I ever lose it, I will just simply buy another one, because essentially I want the security of my data to be more important than the security of the actual device itself. I think that we're going to see a similar thing like that for notebooks, where maybe the days of people who fancy themselves power users like myself buying a $1,500 or $2,000 laptop is over in the light of in favor of maybe I'm just going to switch to now buying a really good desktop that I can lock up control. And when I leave the house with something, it is once again going to be with a $400 or $500 iPad or a $400 or $500 Chromebook or Windows 10 device that again simply syncs with other data that's being held securely, and I can wipe it or even throw it in a fire if I ever find that data to be on that device to be in any sort of a public sort of situation. So it's hard to know, it's hard to plan where you need to take your technology company, because again, all that has to happen is that there is an incredible worldwide crisis that points out to people that, by the way, we've just added 8 more incredibly powerful categories of organizations that are interested in looking at the data that you consider to be private. And one of them is, at least 3 of them are people that you're supporting with taxpayer dollars. So maybe that should be part of your thinking the next time you have personal photos or personal data or something or even a document. This is something I think of a lot. It's the number of times where I have a document that I had to sign something that was 9 pages long, outlined that, by the way, if this information gets out, here are your personal liabilities. If we find out that it was your copy that got out there, the ability to be able to say that I'm not even going to allow a situation in which I can even I even wonder if this anybody saw this document. Again, the ability to simply hold down the command key and the C key and restart, say, oh, look, welcome. Thank you for buying your brand new MacBook. Let's help get you started. Whereas it used to have 256 gigabytes worth of information and data.
What one recommendation? I think you guys would support this. Go out and get a Synology or a QNAP or some other similar NAS system that you control. Use that as your cloud, as your backup. Take everything off of public clouds, including iCloud, and have your stuff back up to that thing that you control. If you want to encrypt it, go ahead. I do. And then ideally have an off-site version of it as well. That's expensive. Yeah.
And you have to learn.
There's like 2 stratas there, I think.
I'm sorry. I'll make this.
Andy, then Renee.
There are a couple of different things you need to know about that you have to learn a little bit more about how these things work. But yes, you can have you can set it up your NAS so that your data on your laptop or your phone automatically backs up to this device to your NAS. Then the NAS itself on its own is automatically backing it up to Backblaze or another a really, really secure cloud service, so that at least you have those backups everywhere. So it really does feel sometimes like that the way that people steal your phone in public places is that one person takes out your back pocket, and then behind their back they pass to somebody else who then runs off with it to a second place. So sometimes you feel like I've just taken this picture, it ran from my phone to my NAS back home, that ran from my NAS into a secure cloud server, and now there's no stuff on my phone whatsoever to incriminate me. I'm sorry, go ahead, Renee.
I think we also have a know-how that describes how to do that. I'll find it. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
Renee.
So it's difficult.
Yeah, so I mean, the thing for me is that this is all most of these attacks, these are absolutely they're a crime. And when you start looking at the way that you handle these things, there are people have 2 different kinds of reactions to them. And you can never say that one is right and wrong. People are entitled to the way they feel about it. And you never want to make them feel bad about it. So there are going to be some people for whom safeguarding their data is the most important thing. And there's going to be some people for whom making sure no one else can get to their data is the most important thing. And both are absolutely valid points of view. Just make sure you're super educated, super informed, and you make a really informed decision about it. And then once you do, you might decide that you want the convenience of an online backup system. You want Backblaze, you want Carbonite, you want one of those things, and you can make a client-side encryption key so that it is as secure as possible, and then you pay a fee and you don't have to worry about forgetting to do your backups or your technology stopping or something happening that makes you lose those photos or those documents that are the most important things in the world to you.
We'll probably talk about this at some point with Steve Gibson too. His phrase, which I think is really good, is trust no one encryption. And that means only you have the key. That then there's a responsibility on you not to lose the key. But if it's a backup, then, you know, you just make another backup. You don't want to lose. You don't want to find out you forgot the key the day you need to restore it, obviously. Nobody's going to do this. I understand that.
Most normal people, the protection of their data is important, and they can do an online backup service with reasonable security, and they'll be fine. For anybody who, if you're even slightly worried about your security, then do everything you can to do that trust no one system.
I wonder, though, if people just assume that, well, if it's on the iCloud, it's safe, right?
I've given all the news stories, I think, now.
With more information, though, this is an opportunity for Apple. If this doesn't become as big a part of their marketing as the fact that, hey, we're the people who make the iPhone. They are the company that hands down I trust with. If there's in terms of big companies, they're the one that I trust with my data more than hands and shoulders over anybody else. They're the ones that I think that would want to not only educate people on how to keep their data safe, but also to invest in new ways to make it so safe that it is just like iTunes was easier and simpler than piracy. We are going to make security easier and simpler than being insecure. This is
there
such
you go.
A great
what a
place
great,
for
well,
Apple.
There was a greenfield. Yes.
There was a news story today about Apple requiring app-specific passwords for third-party iCloud integration. And you're going to have to generate an app-specific password, which is way more secure. Tons of complaints about it. People are super upset about it, but it is absolutely a better security model.
Can I use Monkey123?
The ability to revoke permissions for one specific app instead of having to crash all access to your iCloud account is such a big deal. Yeah.
Speaking of iTunes, it looks like Apple picked the right format. Fraunhofer, which invented both AAC and MP3, has now said, hey, MP3, the license expired, the patent expired. So MP3 is now free. So you should probably use AAC because we can still charge a license fee. It is. I think it's arguably a much better compression format than MP3. But so there's good news, which is that MP3 is now unencumbered and patent free, and anybody can use an MP3 encoder and so forth without paying a patent. And that
Marco had a good article about that this morning.
Yeah, I think that's really good news. AAC is great, but it is still patent encumbered by Fraunhofer. And it, of course, supports DRM and some other features. There are unencumbered, that is unpatented, unlicensed technologies like FLAC that you can use, which is arguably, now that data storage isn't so expensive, a better way to store everything. That's lossless encryption. Not encryption, it's compression.
Again, the way the world changes. Now, when MP3 was created,
it's a revolution.
When it was created, storage was astronomically expensive, so you really need to crown down.
Storage and also, bandwidth, Andy. Don't forget. I mean, the fact that you could take a song and make it a tenth of the size and then
1,000 in your pocket.
Zap it to your friends, that was big, too.
And also people were the people you're trying to sway were people who were using either Walkman tape players with crummy free headphones or Walkman Discman CD players with crummy free headphones. And now you have people who are paying like $3,000 on headphones with a $8,000 digital audio converter connected to it just to listen to music on the subway because their ears are so sensitive and the music they have is so pristine. So
I know, it's funny. It really cracks me up. All right, let's take a break. Is there any other hard news that we want to talk about? Apple is the first U.S. company to cross $800 billion in value. So everything I've said that's negative about Apple is clearly completely wrong, and I'm an idiot.
It goes up and down. They'll be doomed again next week.
Apparently, wait a minute, I have to look at this article. Apple invented a pizza box.
It's for Cafe Max.
Oh, okay. Did they patent it? I hope they did.
No, but they do everything. Like, they design every chair, every, like, it, this is just one of the things that they do everything. It's yeah. silly.
See, and if then they, if they had a sense of humor and they were really wanted to be mean to somebody who's been, like, getting scoops, they would leave one of these somewhere where they think Mark Gurman might find it. and then
it's a new saucer-shaped Macintosh.
New aeration.
The new Mac Pro.
The new Mac Pro is shaped similarly to our new Mac campus. Stephen Levy got a great tour, an inside look at the Wired. Not Wired and Stephen Levy got an inside look at the new Apple Park. Boy, that is a stunning picture. Is that a drawing? That is whoever took that. It's a drone picture, clearly. And so if you want to, you know, get deep inside of it, he starts, which is nice, with Steve Jobs speaking at the city council and getting the permission in 2011 to break ground on this.
Mr. Steve Jobs to come here tonight to give a special presentation.
Probably Steve's last public appearance. He was very ill.
In 2011, Steve Jobs stood before Cupertino's city council to pitch them on one more thing.
Apple's grown like a weed. And as you know, we've always been in Cupertino. And it's clear that we need to
It just breaks my heart to see him so ill.
At the time, Apple was on the verge of becoming the most valuable company.
I'll stop the narration. But, so it does start there, which is appropriate, and talk goes through the building of it. There's a great picture of Johnny Ive in there.
What's that look?
He's got that look. You don't know if he's pensive.
A football player look.
Yeah, he's...
Season 4 promo pick of Prison Break.
Oz. Chapter, but it's an aluminum the second prison. Chapter. Aluminium. It's aluminium.
Aluminium.
Some great sketches in here. This is Norman Foster's sketch of the building's evolution. I don't know if this is true. From propeller-shaped to circle? Maybe. I don't know. There's Norman Foster. He was one of the architects. And he had 250 people working on the design at the height of it. So highly recommended. I don't know. Are there any highlights you want to mention about it? It's a beautiful campus. You can see.
Such an Apple product.
Yeah, the thought that went into this. A master plan that Apple executives believe will enhance worker productivity, withstand earthquakes and droughts, and fulfill the vision of the man who dreamed the whole thing up. They did not name it Steve Jobs Park. They named it Apple Park. But I have to think that at the inauguration, some part of it, maybe the theater.
Well, the theater, right? Yeah, the theater is, I think, officially going to be named.
Is it official that he's going to be the Steve? All right, good. Yeah, the Steve Jobs Theater. 1,000 seats. That's pretty big. 20-foot tall, 165-foot diameter glass cylinder topped with a metallic carbon fiber roof. It's on a hill at one of the highest points on the campus. Tim Cook says it felt like him.
Yeah, it underscores at least my belief that Apple isn't necessarily a computer company or technology company. They're a design company, and their medium happens to be technology. That's their main medium of expression. But yeah, the fact that when they're going to have thousands of light switches in a building, that they want those light switches to be absolutely correct. I would not be shocked if, like, the first time if I get into this building, like, on opening day or something, I will see that all of the screws on the light switches are either A, lined up so that both of them are exactly vertical, or there are no screws whatsoever, because those would be vulgar. You want to hide the mechanism by which this is affixed to the wall. And I don't mean that as a dig. I mean that this is a design focused company. They really like to have a beautiful object, beautiful and functional object, but there is no reason for them to design something that is not beautiful in every way. Like Renee wrote a few months ago, that it's I don't think it's important that the speaker ports on the bottom of a phone line up geometrically precisely with the charging jack, but Apple is a company that would say it's going to drive us nuts.
Yeah, that's probably
like,
true.
Like when you see like a pattern floor and there's one tile that's out of sync, that disrupts the pattern, and it's
can't
like,
unsee it.
Exactly. And like 3 years after moving into this house, you're like, we're ripping up the entire floor. We're redoing the whole floor because this is driving me slowly insane. Apple's a company that's driven slowly insane by oddness of design.
As an example, Steve wanted a breathing building. You know, one of the pet peeves of anybody who's worked in an office building is that the windows don't open. So they designed a ventilation system based on Formula One cars. It sucks the air in from right under the lip of the canopy, and it goes up and over a ventilation and goes through the building and then comes out the other side. It's a breathing building. They also put in it's 805,000 square feet of solar panels. That will actually power the entire ring on sustainable energy, which is just phenomenal. There's sliding glass doors on the exterior of the cafe. They go all four stories and weigh each door, get this, 440,000 pounds. They open and close quietly via mechanisms hidden underground. They're pretty massive mechanisms. It's really
$500 bounty to the first Apple employee who posts a video when they know that the doors are going to close. I'm saying your tauntaun will freeze before you hit the first marker. Well, I'll see you in hell. And then jumps on a Segway and zips out before the doors close.
That's an amazing number.
Donnie's been busy.
Void and non-binding.
440,000 pounds. The budget, I guess, was a little out of control at one point, but. And so they made some changes, but it doesn't look like a whole lot of expense was spared on this. $5 billion, Apple won't confirm it, but Stephen Levy says, Cook doesn't correct me when I cite it during our time together. So $5 billion. But you know, when you have $250 billion, $5 billion doesn't feel like all
also,
that
also,
much.
Also, when you're making a building that you think is going to be the flagship home of your company for 50 years, go. Mm-hmm. That's why you hire a top flight architect, because at some point Ozymandias' statue is going to sink into the sand, but you want to leave behind at least something that says this is something we could have done something practical but anonymous, or practical and affordable but ugly as an office park. We decided to create something that's even beautiful to drive past on your way to work someplace else at a lesser company.
Here's I think something kind of cool. The chief architect says if Steve could reappear, it would be as he conceived it when he last saw it as drawings. He'd find some details that weren't addressed in his lifetime, some new details, but I believe he'd approve them. They really wanted this to be what Steve dreamed of, and I'm very sorry he didn't get to see it, but we will get to see it. The good Lord willing, and the creeks don't rise. Really well worth reading this. Levy, as usual, gets the best access.
Like I said, I had no doubt that at some point, well before the official opening, they would invite someone that they've had a lot of good experience with and just open all the doors because they know that everyone's going to want to see it anyway. And so why not make that a beautiful experience, and also make sure it's not, you know, some dingbat who's going to say, so how much does this light switch cost? Like, well, where'd you get the carpeting from? As just appreciating Apple's history and knowing what they're trying to achieve with this building.
Yeah.
Campus, rather.
Yeah.
It's really curious to see if they commissioned any sculpture or any art for it. Or if they decide that they don't want to have art or sculpture inside it because they feel as though the building itself makes its own statement, it would be really interesting to the idea of saying we're going to have a little sculpture garden with artists that we really really like and art that we intend to hold, not a rotating gallery or something, because I do consider Apple to be the sort of company that would do that. And of course, there's a long tradition of companies saying, well, guess what? We're going to commission, commission Jackson Pollock to make a football field size painting for our lobby because we want beautiful, our entrance to be a very beautiful place for people to be.
Here's the outside of the Fitness and Wellness Center. This is stone from a quarry in Kansas. That's then
free climb.
Well, I'm surprised Jay's not on there right now.
They did actually rough it up. It was distressed so that it would look like the Wawona Hotel, which was Steve Jobs' favorite hotel in Yosemite. Does it look like the Wawona? I think it does. That's pretty. It doesn't look like a mountain in Yosemite, but it looks like the Wawona. You could probably free climb it. Anyway, really well done, Stephen. Congratulations. I'm actually really glad that they gave this to Stephen and not somebody like Charlie Rose on 60 Minutes. Although I suspect we'll see that.
I'm sure it's right. Exactly. It's going to come. But yeah, Stephen is appropriately a legend. He's a very, very accomplished, but also very, very serious minded person. He doesn't get caught up in garbage, and his work is of uniformly magnificent quality.
Absolutely.
And I think that it stops being PR when you get someone like Stephen Levy in. It starts being a gift to other people. It starts being, we want to collaborate on this part of our public history, and who better to write this piece of history? We're going to select the person who's going to write this part of our history, and you can't select better than Stephen Levy.
Stephen also cites the criticism, and there has been a smattering of criticism, chiefly from experts in kind of corporate management, who say the trend with big companies these days, Twitter and Amazon, is to build corporate headquarters that incorporate the company and the employees into the city. This is more a fortress.
Walled garden.
Yeah, a walled garden.
Literally.
And boy, it's not surprising in a way that Apple should make something. And I totally fit Steve's vision that isolates its employees so they can just concentrate on the work and not worry about the outside world. Yeah. And that's very much what I think Steve was.
That is an excellent point. That's exactly why you have someone like Steve talking about this. Imagine if obviously you have to have security on this campus, and you can't. There's a reason why if you go to Pixar, there is a gate there. You can't simply show up and want to walk around and see and get your picture taken with a giant Luxo statue.
Yeah, they don't even allow the public in, do they?
Right, it's a place of business. But wouldn't it have? I think Apple might have missed an opportunity to say, we've got all this land. We are going to build a public park that is right across the street, but looks like it's integrated with the campus, so that our employees can decide to spend their lunch break in this public park. And in doing, and A, it would be a gift to the community. B, it would make them. But B, it would say, "Oh, I just, you know, I'm the head of the team that's making the new VR goggles. I thought that people were using this sort of technology this way. It turns out that I never see people using technology this way. Ah." Maybe I should go back in and bring this up at the next meeting.
Yeah.
I don't think anything should be held against them for not building a public park, but I wonder if that would have been a really interesting opportunity. And wouldn't you have loved to have seen a public park that was not designed by a huge committee of people, and everyone has to have their own input on, well, if you're going to put a sculpture in, we get to vote on what's going to be represented there. We get to have it yanked out of there if we don't like it. As say, no, we know what we're doing. We're a really good design firm. We're going to build this for you. If you don't want it, that's why we dug these posts at either end of it. We can actually replace those with gates that people cannot enter through, and we'll make it into a private park if you'd like, because we own the land. But hey, if that's what you want, because you thought that you didn't, there's no Canadian war heroes that have been represented in the sculpture park, we don't want to offend you. Guess what? You don't get to use this 40-acre beautiful park.
Listen, bloggers, please put away your infrared cameras and your micro antennas and just enjoy the park, okay?
Yeah.
Stop pointing at Johnny. Yeah,
really. Microsoft's developers conference was last week. They announced, of course, many apps for iOS. But in the second day of Build, a kind of a surprise announcement from Apple. They say that you're moving iTunes to the Windows Store. Now, I'll tell you why that's important. The new Microsoft version of Windows for schools, and I suspect for a lot of people who don't want the complexity of a full Windows, Windows 10S restricts you to buying apps, as we talked about last week, from the Windows Store only. Now, that's good for security, but it also means no Chrome browser, and until now, no iTunes. Very good news. Apple says the iTunes is coming to the Windows Store.
Yeah.
Boy, once Spotify the Mac said, version is going to be trouble.
Peace in our time.
No. Yeah. If it's better than the Mac version, there is going to be trouble, Leo.
I suspect it'll be identical to the Mac version, because there is a bridge called Centennial, not a physical bridge, a programming bridge that can wrap your existing Windows app in the special.
That's what DJ used, right? DJ Pro, when it went to Windows.
Yeah, special kind of Well, no, this is for Centennial is for Windows standalone apps like iTunes. You wrap it in Centennial. It's kind of a little cocoon that makes it Windows Store compatible. I suspect that app, that's the only way you could get it out quickly. You're right, though.
Such a monolith.
If they did a full rewrite.
Yes.
That can would you imagine? Be. Well, yeah. I mean, to be fair, Microsoft best version of Microsoft Office is on iOS. Wouldn't it be funny?
Yeah.
That'd be ironic.
Also, Renee asked, was wondering when the news was still fresh, whether or not companies would be allowed to create Windows Store apps that have their own web renderer. And it turns out that Microsoft's taking the same tack as Apple is, where you can create a browser, but it has to use the rendering engine as Edge. They're not allowing a third party engine, probably for security reasons.
It's absolutely understandable. You know, and at least till the end of the year, you can upgrade to Pro for free on Microsoft's own hardware. But what they're offering, and I think it's intriguing, is a secure version of Windows. It wouldn't have been vulnerable to WannaCry. It wouldn't. I mean, that's really intriguing.
That would have been true of Windows 10 as well.
The Google Docs sharing bug, right, which is a really nasty one, also would not have worked. Yeah. I think
it's terrible. This has to be a quick aside because this isn't a Microsoft podcast. But yeah, the fact that Microsoft finally said, "Look, we need all of you, to stop using Windows XP. We are not going to support it at all after this date. So we really need you to stop using it." And because of how bad this attack was last week, said, "Okay, we're introducing an update for XP just to stop you idiots from causing
more
problems."
My B2B ActiveX apps, Andy.
I'm sorry, but my point of fail display has been working just fine for me ever since 1989. I don't really see a reason to upgrade at this point.
It's really Win32.
Keeping your customer data from being stolen. Yeah. Oh no, that would be horrible.
Win32 must die.
That would be a great movie.
No, Mr. Tarantino, I expect you to die.
Yeah. But yeah, that's another thing that Apple can. Boy, they already have. They're not invulnerable. They're not immune to attack as the fleet of updates that were suddenly posted yesterday, including what was it, like two dozen. Reading through it, I think that a lot of it was directly to address some of these vulnerabilities that have been brought to light.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, no one has a better reputation, at least, for being the lesser operating systems you need to worry about in terms of malware, in terms of malicious software. So again, another thing that, boy, if they really want to just remind people of what makes Apple awesome, privacy and security and design are the three things that no one can touch them on, and they no one looks like they're in a position to lap them at any point.
Well, the iPad Pro commercial was just on that topic. They say you don't have to worry about the security aspect,
right?
You know, they had the computer Twitter thing.
I think it's a reasonable selling point. Finally, I'm not sure if this story belongs in rumors, the next segment of the show, or this segment, truth. So you tell me. I'm trying to find the story. It sounds like, could it be Amazon TV is going to show up on the Apple TV?
Yeah. Is that Recode?
Recode said it, but they said it wasn't confirmed. And then
they
were
going to announce it at WWDC.
Yeah, and I saw a newer story that said they would announce it at WWDC and it would be available in June. That's called the Peace in Our Times as well.
And they're going to start selling Apple TVs again and perhaps other things.
I suspect that would happen as a tit for tat, right?
Yeah.
And I would guess that Apple also negotiated a lower than 30% fee for sales in the Amazon TV store, right?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, they've done that for a long time. If you, I think like Netflix and a lot of other big digital vendors enjoy, I think it was 15% or even less if they're, you know, most favored nation status. But it was really like Apple kept saying, just make it. The SDK is there. Just make it. And Amazon's like, we're not making it. And we're taking your damn Apple TV out of the store.
Exactly. It wasn't Apple's fault. It wasn't Apple trying to protect its market. It really was Amazon trying to decide what makes the best thing. And isn't that embarrassing that you're really not going to sell competing streaming boxes on Amazon? Really?
Well,
that's like who hurt you when you were in junior high school?
I know.
Who used to stack your locker and dump your books that made you feel
me, like Mr. Glass,
the way that you need to? Yeah,
childish is in these days. I should give credit to John Pachkowski, who was you know, this makes it a little more than rumor when it comes from John.
That's right, yeah.
Apple will announce Amazon Prime Video coming to Apple TV at WWDC. Sources in a position to know tell BuzzFeed News Amazon Prime Video app, long absent, is indeed headed to Apple's diminutive, thank you, John, set-top box.
a wee little set-top box.
One more thing to watch the Worldwide Developers Conference for June 5th. I'll be on a plane to Lima, Peru at that time, so you'll just have to telegraph it to me. Send me a text, and I'll get it in the morning. The app is expected to go live this summer, but cautioned the hard launch date might change. Amazon had previously declined even to submit an app for inclusion in the App Store, just because they figured probably it would get turned
down. If
they
haven't had that in their pocket for a year and a half, I'm just embarrassed. I mean, yeah. It's just such an easy app to make.
Oh, yeah. No, you know they have. It's on every other platform. And I think that's, you know what, it's consumer friendly. We want it.
Yep.
It makes the Apple TV more desirable.
It's the Netflix model. Just watch Netflix everywhere.
Yeah. Why not? All right, let's take a break. And the fun part of the show, I think we now will have to designate a rumor section.
Rumors, rundown.
Rumors. Nothing but foolish.
Sponsored by the poop emoji. The poop emoji. And you can smell it, but you can't talk about it.
Our show today brought to you by Capterra. It is a solution I've been waiting for a long time, because people always call the radio show and say, well, I am a doctor's office and I'm trying to find the best doctor's software. What is it? And I don't know. And of course, mostly what people do is they Google it, you know, medical management software, or, you know, delivery management software, or A/B testing software. And then you get a list of search results that are of dubious value and certainly don't cover the waterfront and are missing the thing you really want the most, which is real reviews from real people and using it in real situations. In comes Capterra. This is a free service, by the way, to you. This is free. It's a directory of thousands, more than 30,000 software, business software solutions in 400 categories. So I mentioned a couple, but I mean, I'm applicant tracking, church management, construction, CRM, e-commerce, field service, help desk. And the beauty part is, see, here I am on the construction management software products, and you can see all the products. You can see a tab that shows you the top 20 most popular products, but you can also filter it, not only by rating, but by how many seats it supports, features. So I could say, well, no, I have to have building management. I don't even know what I'm doing here. Commercial, incident reporting. I don't know. I shouldn't check too many of these. Selection sheet, subcontractor management. I don't know. Filter it, and then you get another list. And then the best part is you can check a box, say, oh, Sage 300, construction and real estate. E-sub, that looks interesting. Viewpoint, you can then have it in a comparison grid, which gives you a feature-by-feature comparison where, you know, I mean, look at this. And then the most important thing from my point of view is real reviews, real ratings from real users. And Capterra does a great job of working through these reviews to make sure that they are credible, that they are real. They're from people who are actually using it, so you can really trust them. This is brilliant. Capterra is Capterra. If you are charged at your business with figuring out what program to use to manage your membership the thing I hate at the end of the year, the performance appraisal, you want some performance appraisal software, this has the directory. It's completely free to use. There's no obligation. There's no registration. Notice no login box. They just want you to visit. 200,000 ratings and reviews from real users you can trust. Capterra.com/twit. Normally I'd say you get it for free, you know, for 30 days. No, I can't do that because it's already free. Join the millions who use Capterra every month. This is really, I never had heard of it, and I was so pleased to find it a great idea. Capterra.com/twit. All right, let us have some fun. I'm going to start with the best rumor because it comes from Mark Gurman, and it's really juicy. Apple plans laptop upgrades to take on Microsoft. That's kind of an interesting thing to say. I doubt that it's really to take on Microsoft, but...
No, it's to finally ship. I mean, people were really upset that they didn't have Kaby Lake processors in the MacBook Pro when it launched, but the Kaby Lake processors, the quad cores, and the one with the Iris Pro graphics just weren't available. They weren't ready yet, so Apple shipped those. So now they're ready, and Apple's shipping those computers, and there was a hope that they'd be able to get them out by March, sort of-ish, but that didn't work out. So now June is when all those MacBooks...
Three new laptops, according to people familiar with the matter. The MacBook Pro will get a faster Kaby Lake from Intel. Said the people who requested anonymity to discuss internal planning. Apple's also working on a new version. I'm pleased to see this, of the 12-inch MacBook with a faster chip.
Still M, though. It's Kaby Lake M.
Yeah, right. So it won't be really that big.
And it's sort of interesting because Kaby Lake, I mean, it's going to be a small increase in performance, but we really don't know what the graphics was. Some of the graphic solutions they had for Kaby Lake were actually, it looked slower than the solutions they had for Skylake. So it'll be really interesting to see what Apple and Intel managed to work out.
The company, according to Gurman, has also considered updating the aging 13-inch MacBook Air with a new, which is surprising to me, with a new processor.
That might be the Microsoft part.
Yeah, because the Air, I thought, was going to be the next thing to go, frankly.
If the MacBook price could drop low enough. It looks like it still hasn't.
Yeah, I would, you know what I think is missing from this, for those of us who don't really want a touch bar, is a nice upgraded non-touch bar MacBook Pro. I bought the 13-inch non-touch bar, and I love it. It's like a classic MacBook, but just could you give us a little, you know, maybe 4 Thunderbolt ports instead of just 2, or, you know, make that. But do you think that's not going to happen because it confuses the
line? I'd love a higher-end one, too. Like, I mean, there is, like, if you can make a concession to people on the low end who want maximum portability or want that Retina Air, that's fine. But make a concession on the high end, too, for people who are willing to pay the battery life premium for having a more powerful processor, better graphics options, and sort of like that workstation-quality laptop they've been aching for.
Don't look for new designs. Okay. This is basically the typical slipstream upgrade where you take the existing design, you put a faster chip in it, right?
Yeah. It's they have a problem with ultra portables right now. It's getting harder and harder for them to explain why the MacBook Air has the screen it has, for instance, when that's table stakes in the Windows world. That's table stakes in the not in the Chromebook world, but almost in the Chromebook world. You have to get a super, super cheap screen to get the screen that's the quality of the MacBook Airs. And also the MacBook Nothing, it's a great, I think it's one of the best machines that they've made, because it is really ideally suited for its intended purpose, but it really is not going to be a computer for the people. So they have a problem with the MacBook Air, and they need to address it really, really soon. I think it's got to be supremely disappointed to buy a MacBook Air and be seated in the coffee shop or in his classroom or in a conference room next to anybody who has spent half as much money on the machine that they got that runs Windows.
It hasn't had a speed boost since 2015, but frankly,
it was supposed to be end of life.
It needs a Retina display. Do you think they'll do that?
They originally didn't do it because it wasn't architected for it.
Oh,
yeah, but they need to have relatively inexpensive machine that has a Retina display that is more practical and functional for most people. Again, I'm walking into the store with money in hand because I need to walk out with a laptop. Default user sort of person, and right now I don't think they have it. That basically, and I would only expand that to say that you need to have at least one standard USB port, the port that is non-negotiable for, again, a Volks computer, a sort of, I'm walking in, I like Apple, I have not been dreaming of this day since I was a little boy or a little girl that I would become of age and could walk into an Apple store and buy my own MacBook. I'm saying that I need a laptop, I want it to be an Apple, but I'm not willing to be talked into, I'm not willing to have explained why I'm stupid for wanting to have USB ports, I'm not going to be talked into why I'm stupid for wanting to have a more conventional keyboard, and I don't want to be here about how I'm stupid for wanting a really good battery life. I want a machine that is that covers most of what 80 to 90% of people who buy laptops want. They don't have it.
Also from, as long as we're doing the Gurman, I'm doing the Gurman. Google is going to push its assistant to the iPhone. They'll announce that tomorrow, if they do, at the Google I.O. conference. We'll be covering that live, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC.
Will there be Google Assistant Silver Leo? That's my big question. That's all I want now.
I know. And so also a new photo book service. We'll hear a lot about Google tomorrow.
That really is a Trojan horse. The idea of putting Google's smart assistant inside the iPhone. It's the same thing that Microsoft did, saying that now Cortana is going to be inside the iPhone. Not only that, though, because that's the existing feature, but we are going to use that as a way to this is going to be the smart assistant that is going to be keeping track of what you were doing on your Windows machine and allow you to continue that work on your iPhone. So the ability to simply you have this AI that's on your desktop, that's also on your phone, that keeps and that knows where you were in the day and knows where you will typically be going later on in the day. The ability to put that on the iPhone so that now you're not going to be using Siri to do a lot of this stuff because you're used to using Cortana to do that stuff. And Cortana is going to be taking care of you. And Cortana, just like your own physical, this personal assistant you've actually hired in physical space, is following you from the office to the meeting offsite to the conference you're going to. It's an interesting way of infiltrating into what could be a closed system. So that could be a very interesting part of the keynote.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow. And, of course, we'll find out June 5th from Apple. This is some stuff's going to happen.
I love it. So competitive. I love it.
Yeah.
It's like great age of technology.
Yeah. And Microsoft just has theirs. It's funny. All the developers' conferences are within a month of each other.
Yeah.
Apple
and
Watch,
Samsung and Viv, all that.
According to heart rate monitoring program used with the Apple Watch, Cardiogram, and the University of California, San Francisco, they did a health e-heart study. 6,000 participants using Apple Watches, but engineers from Cardiogram trained an algorithm to predict AFib based on the heart rate that the Apple Watch was receiving. Now, we know the Apple Watch does a pretty good job of heart rate, but apparently, according to this study, it detects heart rate irregularity with 97% accuracy, which is not good enough for diagnosis, but certainly a good start towards a screening tool or a tool that might say, hey, you might want to go see the doctor. You're doing a little bit of stuff here. That's interesting. This is not something Apple ever pushed as a potential feature of it, partly because you need FDA approval for something like that.
Better to have partners do that.
Let them do that.
But yeah, data. If you collect data, you can analyze data, and the better you can analyze it, the better services you can provide.
Right.
And not helping someone to have a outpatient procedure in today, next month instead of a quintuple bypass in 6 years, or to be taken off a plane feet first, is a very positive feature.
Yeah.
A lot of people might be willing to pay a 20% premium for that feature.
Well, our own Jeff Jarvis has suffered from AFib. He recommended, and I bought, a little device which I'll carry around with me at all times called the Cardia, K-A-R-D-I-A. And it's an EEG, EKG in a piece of hardware that you pair to your phone. And it actually does a whole EKG that you can then send to your doctor for reading, or their doctors. They have a service that you can pay for to read your EKG. So that's even an even better solution. The problem is that people who have arrhythmia don't have it all the time necessarily. It hits them suddenly. They can't record it. But the watch can be continuously recording and kind of give them some information which they can pass on to their doctor. And then, of course, they'd go on and get an EKG. Apple is apparently, this is a rumor, working on a diabetes treatment tech for the Apple Watch, but it would be via a smart band. This comes from
Jonathan Geller rumor.
Good or bad? Is that good? What does that mean?
I mean, back in the day, he had tons of leaks about BlackBerries and Apple phones and things. I don't think he's done leaking in quite a while.
But he's a boy genius. Really, yeah.
He's the boy genius.
He's the boy genius?
Yeah, the titular boy genius. Yes.
The titular boy genius? Is that why he's hiding his face? Okay.
I mean, we've heard about this several times. I mean, every time this rumor comes out, it's breaking exclusive, and we've heard it 3-4 years going on now. And it's super interesting because that's one of the silver bullets in wearables.
Sure.
And the smart bands is interesting because there is a mini lightning port in every Apple Watch, but it's sealed up for diagnostic use only. And it's interesting to me, like, how would Apple do it? Would they unseal that port? Would they have some sort of mechanism to connect the smart band? How would they handle, I have so many legacy bands. How would that all factor into it?
But I'm glad
they're pushing this sort of technology forward.
Yeah.
That's a good question, particularly because a device like that would probably require a prescription. So it would not be out of line for, say, well, actually, you're going to have to take your watch to your doctor and they will ship it out. And then 5 days later, they'll ship it back with this actual intelligent glucose reading band on it.
Yeah. Of course, Google has been long rumored to be doing actually, I don't think it's a rumor, a similar thing with a contact lens. But that's just as much vaporware as this one.
Looking back 5 or 10 years from now, it's going to be super interesting to see how this stuff all played out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Goldman Sachs analyst, Simona Jankowski, says she expects the rumored high-end iPhone coming out this fall to be available in 128 and 250 gig storage capacities for $1,000 and $1,100 respectively. This will be, it'll be like the...
pretty much what I paid for the 7 Plus.
Yeah, but it will be, this is the high end, right? This will be the fancy one.
Roughly what I spent on my 128 gigabyte iPad Pro, the big iPad Pro that I use as my daily desktop computer.
Well, remember the rumor for the original iPad? The original iPad was going to be $1,000, and then Steve Jobs came out and said, no, those rumors are silly.
Yeah, that's it. This is just complete speculation.
Yeah, it's not based on information. It's guesstimating the price. Yeah.
Like I said last time, I'm really fascinated by the idea if Apple said we don't have to meet a specific target, we don't have to compete with the price target of the Galaxy S8, for instance. We want to have, and we're not going to delete anything out of the existing iPhone line. We want to make one better, where if people do want to spend an extra couple $100 for something that is just insanely cool, we will take their money. We're good at insanely cool. We like taking people's money. Here you go.
Yeah. I think Apple could do that. How would you do it without sounding crass?
If the MacBook it's like they give you future technology. The future technology is expensive, and they could wait a couple of years and wait for the prices to drop for things like distance charging, or the screen tech they're going to use and built in with the new layer for Touch ID, or they can charge you a premium. And they showed that there's elasticity in that market because the iPad 7 Plus was $20 more than the previous Plus model. And so there is a market for people at a premium, and they just have to position it as, they're giving you the future today. And that's exactly what they did with the Mac Pro. And I don't think, so there'll be some resistance to it. Some people will be offended by the idea of it, but I think a lot of people will think that it really is an exclusive thing. But the other side is that they just will not be able to make a lot of these. And one of the ways that you control demand is with price. And if you raise the price high enough, so a lot of the demand drops off, and then suddenly you can meet your numbers.
I disagree slightly. I think that the way to do it is to take the Apple Watch model, to say that we have the models for people for whom they just have a very practical, logical, they wouldn't use words like rational and logical, but you know what I'm talking about. They like the features, and they're really not moved by the idea of having a ceramic one or having even a stainless steel one. I think that they would say that for people that really like the idea of, again, every time they take out this device that, for God's sakes, even the cheap one they paid $700 for, $700 stinking for God's sake, that they really enjoy that interaction. They enjoy having this and putting it on their nightstand or putting it on the top of their dresser when they undress at the end of the day. And they really like the idea of having this cool white ceramic around their phone. They really like the idea of not necessarily having the better camera or the better wireless charging, but the idea that this design is just manifestly a gorgeous, jewelry type of piece of hardware without, you know, gluing fake diamels onto it. But just I think there are a lot of people who would pay extra money for that, as demonstrated by the Apple Watch. The ceramic one does not do anything that the sport version does. It is the exact same watch, no extra technology, no extra nothing. But there are people that they think of their phone as part of their personal jewelry, as part of their personal style accessories, and so they feel as though they want to have they don't care if the stainless steel iPhone doesn't actually get reception anywhere for any reason, but man, the stainless steel body is such a cool shiny thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's super interesting to me because all of this is just marketing. People think that bigger is better. So if it's a bigger screen, they can charge more for it. Bigger storage, even though the cost for actual NAND flash is not that different. Much more storage is an extra $100. And with the addition, it really is just materials. It's made out of ceramic, so we can charge you more for it. And maybe this will be somewhere in the middle where it's clearly a premium design, and that lets them charge more for it. But it also has these features like distance charging and things that aren't found on the regular model. So it's almost like double the bang for your... Yeah. Your premium buck.
Maybe you speak better than I can, but the Hermes band, that I'm not the sort of person who cares about a really, really beautifully designed, gorgeous. I mean, for heaven's sakes, I bought this shirt on eBay. Okay, this is a secondhand shirt I bought on eBay because it will fit. It looks kind of nice and it's cheap. I'm not the sort of person, but the fact that there is a market for an Hermes band that is
Panerai band, well made, it's amazing.
Exactly. So there are going to be people that are feel underserved by, well, there are three flavors of phone. I can get them in three different colors. Why don't you make me one that is, again, something that even when it stops working, I will not want to throw it away or recycle it or give it to anybody else because it's just a beautiful thing. Just I stopped smoking 15 years ago, but I still have my cigarette case because it's just a gorgeous piece of gorgeous jeweled piece of silver that I just will enjoy someone else in my bloodline having after I kick it.
After you die of lung cancer, yeah. I like the name iPhone Edition.
Yeah, and that would be another way of tamping down. That would be another way of tamping down expectations. Where if they're saying explicitly that we're not constraining supply so much as we can't make this in regular iPhone quantities. So if you want one, you're gonna have to sort of trust to luck that you've been at an Apple store that happened to have a few that got an allotment. We will try to make it as easy as possible, but realize that it's not a limited edition. But we're not going to be making tens of millions of these. We're going to be making, say, hundreds of thousands of these instead. If they set those expectations early on, if anything, it will make it even more attractive, saying, well, this is absolutely not the one that everybody else is going to be having. This is not the aspirational phone where we decided to get the people who have middle income, but they would love to own things that look like their higher income. No. This is literally something that we can't make it at that price point. We have to charge this much money for it because of the way we've made it.
Well, we should just make this clear. It's rank speculation. For all we know, there's 300 million of them in the storage locker somewhere in Cupertino, and they're going to have...
It's no fun after chips, Leo. Then we know about it. Now we can make it anything.
And actually, it's all very credible, and it's very Apple-y. I completely think this is a possibility.
When we talk about rumors, we also talk about, boy, I would really enjoy seeing Apple make a phone like this. So I'm not necessarily predicting it by saying
it's
imagination. That it would get me really excited about seeing what they would design if they said that we get to put a lot more money into design than into improving the camera a little bit. I think they're just as driven by improving the camera on a phone as improving the case. But if they were to say that, look, there is an extra $200 in the price point, and we are expecting that we're going to be spending most of that extra price point just making a beautiful static object that also is a full featured iPhone.
You picked a time to stop when I was having a little snack.
Oh, well, you could say that it's just interesting that WWDC is rumored to have hardware again because it hasn't for like 3 years. Mm-hmm. I think the last
time. It's not unheard of, but it's been a while.
It's rare. And this time we have rumors of the new iPad Pro debuting, the Apple Home Hub debuting, the updated Macs debuting, and whether or not we get all those things, it just makes the entire thing about WWDC is so much more interesting.
That's an interesting sort of commonality between those three, though. If you look at the iPad Pro, this is a device line that is it's struggling insofar as any device that's still making millions of dollars for the company is struggling. but it's no secret that this is the line that is not doing really, really well. Laptops, where there are a lot of people who are saying that We need some. We need signs of life. We need a picture of a MacBook holding up today's newspaper so that we know that the MacBook line is still alive somewhere within Apple. We have rumors of a smart speaker, which is a device that is going so gangbusters that now after Amazon pretty much created this category, Google has gotten into it. Now Microsoft is licensing Cortana devices to Harman Kardon and other makers. And so this also seems like less like Apple saving and reinventing this format as much as we're getting into this 3 years late as soon as everybody has demonstrated to us that maybe we can make some money with this. It's not the position of strength that we kind of love to see Apple in, where we made the iPhone that's kicked everybody's butt last year. Now we're going to have all of our competitors are going to need to have a third butt cheek installed because it kicks three butt cheeks at a time. That's how much we've improved.
Three butt cheeks worth of ass.
Yes.
All right. This concludes. We need a way to conclude the rumor section.
I want to say butts more times. Okay,
butts.
Bottoms behinds.
Picks of the week coming up right after. This word from Tracker. There's a new Tracker in town. Oh, this is a good idea. I'm glad they did this. The Tracker, as you probably know, I hope you know if you've been listening to our shows, is a coin-sized Bluetooth tracking device that helps you find things that you know you own, but you just can't seem to locate. Apparently, Americans spend as much as 50 minutes a day searching for that kind of thing. Your keys, your remote control, your bike, your dog, your wallet, your luggage. Well, the Tracker's got a solution. I love our little Tracker. I attach it to my keys, and that gives me a way to know where my keys are just by checking in on the phone. I can see a map with it pinpointed. But the new Tracker is so awesome because it has a LED light built into it, so you can find your items in a flash, literally. It's available in seasonal colors too, which is nice. You could track up to 10 devices on your phone. You could track and ring the same device from multiple phones, so you can share it with your family and multiple tracker accounts. And you can customize two-way separation alerts. So I love this. If you leave your keys behind, your phone yells at you. If you leave your phone behind, your tracker yells at you. And all the trackers have a little button you can press that'll make your phone ring even if it's silenced. So that makes it fun to find, even in the cushions and things like that. But I love the LED, too. That'll flash as well. And now, you know, if it's under the couch, easy to find, that kind of thing. The Tracker. I want you to go to thetracker.com today and figure out, load up on the tracker you need, the accessories you need, the engraving, the beautiful UV LED printing, and you can check out and add the promo code MacBreak, and you'll get a free Tracker Bravo with your order. Here's one of the reasons the Tracker is unique. With 4.5 million trackers out there, they have the largest crowdsourced GPS network in the world. These are all trackers all over the world, and that means that if you lose a device and somebody takes it and moves it somewhere, maybe with the best of intentions, maybe with the worst, if somebody else running the Tracker app walks by your device, the device will say, "Hey, tell Leo you saw me," and I'll get a ping on my map. Isn't that great? We're headed to South America for a vacation next month. You better believe our backpacks, my camera, the keys, everything I've got will have a tracker attached. Fortunately, with that extra tracker for free, it makes it easy. TheTracker.com, TheTracker.com, and the promo code is MacBreak. Somebody said, don't lose anything in Siberia. You're right. There's not a lot of tracker users in Russia. There's like two or three. Is that right? No, that can't be right. Let's go to the end. Yeah. All right. So if they take your stuff to Siberia, you might be out of luck. But nobody's going to do any better than that. And the places I'm going in South America are very nicely covered in Peru and Ecuador. See all those trackers in the Galapagos right there? Look at that. That's pretty cool. TheTracker.com, promo code MacBreak. Time for the picks of the week. Mr. Andy Anaka, why don't you kick things off for us?
We were talking earlier on about how cool it is to have a NAS and how it can take some of the, your personal privacy security into your own hands. As it happens, I just upgraded my my Synology NAS with a brand new model. It just arrived yesterday, but I haven't had my I don't have enough time yet to do the big upgrade thing. But yes, it is the Synology DS216 Plus 2. Which is a big upgrade over, a good upgrade over my 214 Play that I had, that I bought like 3 or 4 years ago. It has a number of improvements in addition to being a really good NAS with really great software that has built-in features for pretty much and pretty much everything you would want to do, including iOS software for music, for file storage, for file sync, for photo sync, for creating your own VPN. It's really, really slick that way. But it adds a couple of extra improvements. It's faster than my old one. It also adds has better video transcoding, which is something that became a really big feature for me just last year when I started adding a network-based TV tuner to my setup. So with this, it can simply take that full HD streams that I've been recording, even a 4K stream or a 4K video file that that I have, and as soon as I put it on the device, it will transcode it into something that will create, that will be a lot easier to stream over my network or over the internet and install on my my phones and my tablets. So that the idea is being that instead of having to copy these files back onto my Mac, transcode them, and then put them back onto the server, I can just simply designate a folder and say, please keep these high-definition files, but when you see them, please also transcode copies of them that are lower resolution. So without just like the one of the biggest advantages of having a NAS is that you have a computer on the network that is always on, always standing by, always ready to do things, and can be doing things, consuming much less power, even when your Mac is asleep or your other computers on the machine are asleep. And also the other thing it has that's that you get pretty much for free because you have files on this is that it has onboard onboard encryption. It could always do encryption. That's not a problem. But now it does that so fast that if I wanted to simply encrypt things as a matter of course, I can do that, and once again, there will be no load on my Macs or my Windows machines or anything like that. And it has a few extra creature comforts. To prove that I'm taking off the prophylactic, proving that this is actually a brand new thing that I bought.
But oh, yeah, it's beautiful. Look at that. That's gorgeous. Yeah,
the things you can do with this, like for instance, I love the fact that as soon as there's something that I wish I could do with my this NAS, I've always said, oh, well, I should actually now go back to the Synology website and see if I can actually do that without having to buy anything. And so I discovered that the SD card slot that's built into this, and the also the USB 3 port that's on the front has ports in the back, but also in the front. If all I do is take a card out of my camera when I get home from shooting 800 pictures at roller derby and just simply stick it in there, I can there's a app running on the NAS I can set up that says whenever you see an SD card in this slot, I want you to take all the RAW files and all the JPEG files and all the TIFF files and copy them into this directory of pictures in its own dated folder. So now if I wanted to, I could just simply remove it after it's done, pull it out of the NAS when I leave the next day, erase it because I know everything's been backed up, and all I had to do was just stick that card in there. And there's 100 different things you can do with a NAS that way. The fact that my old NAS is working just great. Again, it's 3 or 4 years old, and it's still working great, still working fine. But I decided that I want it to even be more awesomer, so it's worth my spending $300 for an upgraded version of it. Shows you how much I dig this stuff. So it's only about $300. It weighs next to nothing. But the reason why it's only $300 and it weighs next to nothing is that in its current state, it does not have any hard drives inside it. And you need to have NAS sort of NAS approved drives on it. They're regular hard drives, but they are okay with running 24/7. They're extremely, extremely studly drives. So if I weren't just simply pulling the two drives out of my old NAS and putting it into this new one, I would probably be in for about $500 or $600 more to get 4 to 6 terabytes of backed up storage. I have it set up so that There are two drives here, but essentially one is constantly backing up the other. So if there's a complete drive failure on one, I can still get everything on the second one. There's a lot of stuff you need to learn about, but it's really not that hard. Once you can just plug it in, boot it up, spend a couple of hours learning what NAS is like and knowing how they work. And after that, it's just nothing but gravy and gumbo for the rest of your life. So that's my pick. They make a whole line of different NASs. I think this one's a really good one to recommend because I think it's a good bridge between a home user who has either a lot of people, a lot of computers, or a lot of needs, and a small business user who really needs to have network services for their entire small business. And at $300, you can really it's not that expensive. You can really manage that sort of stuff. So, looking forward to rock and rolling with this as soon as I have time to shut down my NAS. When am I gonna not need my NAS and I can actually shut it down? You know, I'm using it to record every piece of I've got every single Colbert show ever since I got that. Network TV tuner. Every single show is there on my NAS. So if you want to ask me what happened on October 13th, 2016, I could pull up the entire show in HD.
You know, you might want to save this particular 3 or 4 months. That's going to be a historic record, I think.
There was a lot of activity there. There was a lot of material to work with. Yeah. A lot of stuff there. Yeah. Good stuff.
I think we all three agree that it's a really good choice. For your backup, there are other choices. Of course, our partner Drobo, a sponsor, also offers a Drobo NAS, and we got a $100 off deal there. But it's hard not to recommend the Synology. Is it the Photos app that does? Because that you gave me an idea. I might do that when I get back from the Galapagos.
If you install the free Photos app, it will be just like Dropbox or Google Photos automatic sync to it. I was talking about a lot of really complicated things. I should say that when I first got the 214 Play, I plugged really all I was using it for. And the only reason why I really had it was I want a central file server.
Right.
And so you plug it in, you start it up, and hey, well, what do you know? Now there's a file server that plugs that appears everywhere without my having to know anything about how the NAS works. And then later on, I said, gee, wouldn't it be nice to have all of my like iTunes library somewhere where everyone can get it? And so after about 10 minutes or 5 minutes of setting things up, now it's being set as now this is a source of music files. And that's how your relationship with the NAS goes. It's absolutely dead simple to get the basic feature working. And then every time you think, gee, wouldn't it be nice if I could do this? It wouldn't be nice if I could do backups here. Wouldn't it be nice if I could backup stuff to a higher cloud service without it tying up my Mac? There's always a feature so that you can do that for free. You just have to spend 15 minutes on the Synology website to read about the feature, and then maybe 10 to 15 to half an hour setting up, and then it just works automatically.
Yeah. So I think it's great. This is the interface to mine. This is at home. I'm logged on to it via HTTPS.
Through any web page. So it's really, you have a desktop interface. It even has like a text editor. It has a notes app. So if you really want to trust nobody but still have access to like an Evernote type of service, well, they can give you an Evernote type of service. If you want to experiment with creating your own WordPress site before publishing anything, you can start a web. You can create a WordPress site that's only available to your home network. Anyway, I can't remember.
These are all the apps you can install. I mean, it really is it's an amazingly complete solution,
including Drupal.
Yeah, you could run your own little Drupal. I could put the old MacBreak site back up.
That's one thing I'm grateful to it for. Nobody has ever seen my extremely extended failures in trying to learn how to run a Drupal site because it's all being done on this private server that nobody
Brilliant.
Sees.
Brilliant. Yeah, it also supports WordPress and generic stuff via Docker. There's really nothing you can't do. All right, Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So my pick, I haven't had a chance to try it yet. I actually can't use these because I have baseboard heating in my place, but Georgia's been using the Ecobee 3 at her place for quite a while. She really likes it. I've had a chance to try it out there. It's really great. This is the Ecobee 4, so the next generation of smart thermostat. And pursuant to our previous conversation, it's got Amazon Alexa built right in. Unlike Apple, who keeps Siri just on Apple devices, Amazon has started licensing out Alexa, so it's appearing on more and more devices. It's almost like Netflix. It's going to be on everything eventually soon, and you can just use it anywhere you want. But this has it built in. It also supports HomeKit if you want to use it with your iPhone, your Apple Watch, your iPad, all your Apple devices. And it's just a really good way to control the environment in your house using home automation. And what I like about this so much more than things like Google Nest is, first, if you are at all, whether it's legitimate or illegitimately creeped out by Google, you don't have to have any involvement with them. But also, they have these little sensors, and you could put them throughout your house, which means that you, if you have strange zones that are colder or warmer, or you're just moving through the house, you can sort of model not just a central place, but a whole different set of points around there. And I had the good fortune to talk to Ecobee about, not this version, but the Ecobee 3 when it came out. And my favorite story, and I might have said this before, so forgive me, is when the head of Ecobee was in Europe and he started noticing all these heat signatures appearing in his house. And he called home and he said, "Honey, are you having a party?" "No, Dad, but it looks like there's 25 people in the house now." Oh, yeah, busted. So there's all sorts of features and things you get out of having that sort of, you know, granular level understanding of your home environment.
Why are you laughing?
No, see, I've said before that in the modern age, the optimum level of technology, you haven't reached it yet unless it is maximizing the variable of incredibly cool and incredibly creepy at the same time.
Well, I think parents have a bit of a creepiness buy. Like, they get like a 50% off coupon on bail.
Actually, until the kid reaches 18, I think you're legally obligated to be creepily involved in their lives.
This is part of the job. I mentioned earlier a device called the Cardia that will take your heart palpitations or whatever. What do they call that? Your heart monitor.
EKG.
Yeah, it's an EKG.
Rampart, we're sending you a strip. Set up an IV with D5W lactate ringers.
Yeah. And this, exactly. This is from a company called AliveCor, and it's AliveCor. It is FDA approved, and it's less than $100. I think it was $79. It's really affordable. AliveCor.com, and I wanted to mention that because
no prescription. You can just order it and buy it.
No prescription. Yeah, I just bought it. You know, once you get one, you might want to get your doctor involved, but they have doctors on site that you can get readings from. They have the quick reading that just does on the machine, and then if you're a little worried, you can then get a more significant reading, or you can email it. You could share it with your doctor, which is pretty cool. Ladies and gentlemen, we have concluded this edition of Mac Break Weekly. Thank you so much, Renee. Richie, glad you didn't float away in the floods of 017.
The great floods of 17.
Odd 17. You can find Renee at imore.com. That's his home. I'm not even away from home. Where he lives is his home away from home.
Yes,
his home is iMore. And he does some great podcasts there as well. It's really great to see you. Thank you, Renee. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Leo.
Andy Inoko, Chicago Sun-Times, CWOB.com, Inoko's Almanac on Relay.fm. Anything else you want to plug?
Nope. I'm just getting the between Google I/O and WWDC, I'm getting like the 5-screen live keynote and then developer conference observation post set up. So lots of stuff of me being tired. Oh, also, I'm doing a lot of stuff on Boston National Public Radio about tech.
Nice.
It's not like a regular like Thursday afternoon spot, but they seem to be calling me back from time to time.
Good,
so
as they should.
Check out my Twitter and you'll see me saying that, oh, I'll be talking about Tony Awards picks and maybe this thing that's sweeping Europe and installing ransomware.
I grew up listening to WGBH. In fact, that's, I think, where I first heard The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was on WGBH. Yep. Great.
They built a studio inside the Boston Public Library.
Wow.
So it's a great day because I go to the BPL, I get a cookie in the cafe, then go across the other side of the cafe, do the show, and then spend the rest of the day in the library. So it's quite a fun day. You can watch me live. You can watch me stutter and stammer and check my notes furtively live.
Thanks to all of you for watching, too. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 1800 UTC. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah. If you want to tune in live, we're on twit.tv/live, youtube.com/live. We're on ustream.tv. We're on twitch.tv. We're in lots of places. And if you're going to watch live, you got to check into the chat room, irc.twit.tv. Be part of the show there. If you're not watching live, then you certainly can watch on demand. Audio and video are available at our website, twit.tv/mbw. And while you're there, find a way to subscribe because you don't want to miss an episode. And subscription means you get everyone of our shows delivered directly to your phone for listening at any time. There are plenty of podcast apps that will do that, like Overcast, Pocket Cast, iCast, UCast, We All Cast. There are plenty of Twit apps, too. Why not just get a Twit app and subscribe that way? Anyway, I guess that's about it for MacBreak Weekly, right? We've covered all the bases. Well, all I can say now is you better get back to work, because guess what? Break time is over. Thanks to Sal Segoyan, too, for his appearance.
Yay. Wow. Honor.